Like to call the meeting to order. This is the January 25th, 2022 virtual public meeting, which is the annual reorganization meeting of the Zoning Board of Adjustment of the Township of Clinton, County of Hunterdon, and State of New Jersey. Adequate notice of this meeting has been given in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, in that an annual notice was published in the Hunterdon County Democrat. The notice of an agenda for this meeting was posted on the bulletin board at the front of the municipal building, the front door of the public safety building, the township website, and faxed to the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Express Times, the Courier News, the Hunterdon Review, and the Star Ledger, no later than the Friday prior to this meeting. Okay, we've already sworn members in, so I will do a roll call. Dr. Lewis?
Yes, here.
Thank you. Ms. Light?
Here.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present. You hear me?
Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Pepper? We hear you, Dan.
Here.
Ms. Rohrbach?
Here.
Ms. Stevens?
Here.
And Mr. Yeager?
Here.
We have a quorum. Okay, at this time, I would like to request nominations for chairperson.
I'd like to nominate Tom McCaffrey.
I'll second it.
Are there any other nominations?
Seeing none, I suggest you close the nominations and ask for a motion.
Okay, can we please have a motion to elect McCaffrey as chairman?
I'll make a motion to elect Tom McCaffrey as chairperson.
Second.
Okay, Mr. Pfeffer. Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Ms. Rohrbach?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
Congratulations, Mr. McCaffrey, to take over the meeting.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate the vote of confidence, and I hope I live up to the task. As I think Ira Bryan has said to me, once you take this, it's an assignment for life. So we'll see how that works out. So far, he's correct. Okay, I'd like to take nominations for vice chair, please. Any nominations?
I'd like to nominate David Pfeiffer.
A second.
Okay, David Pfeiffer. And a second from Sharon Stevens.
Yes.
Any other nominations? I hear none, so I'll declare the nominations closed. And I don't think we need a motion. We can just go straight to a vote, correct? What we've done in the past.
It's better to go with a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
I'll second it.
And Cheryl, I'll second it. Cheryl Lewis. Okay. Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
No, we can't hear you over the paper crinkle.
Yeah.
All right, so did you just call me?
Yes, Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Ms. Rohrbach?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you very much,
okay,
everyone.
Next, we have board experts, and I will move that we appoint the following experts. I'm going to read the list, and let's do these all as one. For attorney, John Drill. Conflict attorney, Jay Bone. Architect, John Hatch from Clark Gate & Hintz. Engineering, Larry Pelletier from Mott McDonald. Traffic expert, Larry Pelletier from Mott McDonald. Lighting expert, Jason Harkins, Mott McDonald. planning expert, Joe Burgess and Tom Behrens, landscape architect, Jim Mazzucco from Brian Bosenberg, conflict landscape architect, John Morgan Thomas, environmental expert, Jeffrey Keller, geology and hydrogeology expert, Matt Mulhall, wireless communications expert, which, by the way, we have did not use again last year, Charles Heck, board stenographer, Jackie Clapp, secretary, Denise Filardo, newspapers for publication, Hunterdon County Democrat, and Star Ledger. So does anyone have any?
You have two questions, Tom. Yep. Landscape architect, you want to do Jim Mazzucco and John Olivo, since John's here tonight, and he also works with B.W. Bosenberg, and the board has heard from him before.
Yes, let's do that and put that on there.
And my second question is, under architects, you said
you just hold that. John Hatch and Michael Hanrahan. I missed the second name. Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah.
Okay. Could I have a second to that motion, please?
Second.
Okay. That was David, Denise.
Sorry. But who made the motion?
McCaffrey. McCaffrey made the motion.
That's that. Okay, thank you.
And Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, just a second, please. Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Ms. Rohrbach?
Yes.
Steven?
Yes.
And Mr. Dixon? The motion carries.
Okay, thanks. Just a side note, the planning board is looking at hiring a second architect. And if they do that, then we may want to hire that architect as well. So I was talking to a couple of people from the planning board over the past week. So that may come back to us in a month or so. And if they interview someone, I may go and interview that person as well. And if someone else wants to join in that interview, we'll put the word out and someone else can join. So we have a recommendation from two people to come back to this board when it gets to that point. So just sit tight on that one. I'll continue to make the motions here to move this along. I move that we approve the 2022 meeting calendar as sent out by Denise. Can I have a second on that, please?
Second.
Okay. Denise, would you call the roll, please?
John, before the roll is called on that, can someone just, maybe you can ask Denise, can you read the meeting dates for the year into the record?
Okay, so the meeting dates, the first meeting is tonight, which is January 24th, February 28th, March 25th, April 25th, May 23rd.
Can you just go a little louder?
May 23rd, June 27th, July 25th, August 22nd, September 26th, October 24th, November 28th, and December 19th, which is the only meeting that is not the fourth Monday of the year.
And the reorg meeting for 2023 is when?
January 23rd of 2023.
Okay, so all those dates need to be in the resolution that gets published in the paper, and also all those dates need to get into the minutes.
Okay, yes, and they are in the resolution.
Okay. Including next year's reorg?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I will send it to you again in the morning for your review before I publish it.
Item F on the agenda is approval of 2022 rules.
Tom, you made a motion. It was seconded. I interrupted to have her read it, but you need a roll.
Oh, we didn't vote? Oh, okay. Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Okay, this is for the 2022 calendar approval and the 2023 meeting. Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Mr. Rohrbach?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Okay, thanks. Item F on the agenda, approval of 2022 rules and regulations. And John, you got no suggested changes. Is that correct?
Correct. And I'm just going to ask Denise to email me that tomorrow, because that was one of the documents that told me I shouldn't, I couldn't download off the box.
I will definitely do that. Yeah, I'm not sure what the problem is.
We'll deal with that tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. I move that we approve the 2022 rules and regulations. Could I have a second, please?
Second.
Cheryl.
Okay. And Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Ms. Rohrbach?
Yes.
Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
Mr. I think you might be on mute. We can't hear you.
Who, Tom Yeager or me?
Yes, Tom Yeager.
He said yes.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, now I can hear you. Thank you.
Okay.
Review of vouchers. I looked through the bill. We had a few more this time than we've had in the past, Cam. Bill, Glenn Meadows, Zinn, Glenn Meadows, Glenn Meadows, Glenn Meadows, Garciano, et cetera. So does anyone have any comments or questions about the bills this time, the vouchers? Okay, hearing none, we will move on. Approval of meeting minutes. There are two sets out there. August 23rd, eligible members are Lewis, McTiernan, Pfeffer, and Stevens. Denise, I think I sent you a couple minor typo errors. Does anyone else have any comments or corrections on the August 23rd minutes?
I have sent the change for the template for the...
Eric, can you speak louder?
I sent an email to Denise about the template on page 3, 4, somewhere in the beginning for the role of the vote.
Those changes have been made, both Tom's and Sharon's. And version 2 was in the box account.
Does that have to do with this? Pardon me. Does that have to do with the Serrani vote? The grid, the vote grid for the Serrani matter?
Yes.
So that it now indicates that Tom and Yeager and I were recused on that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments or corrections? If not, could I have a motion to approve those minutes? Again, it's Lewis, McTiernan, Pfeffer, and Stevens.
So moved.
Second.
And Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Not eligible.
Oh, sorry, wrong line. Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
And Ms. Rohrbach?
Ms. Stevens.
I think it's Ms. Stevens.
I'm sorry, Ms. Stevens. I'm having trouble here with this.
Yes.
Okay, I think that passes. Next is November 22nd. Eligible members are Lewis, McCaffrey, McTiernan, Rohrbach, Stevens, and Yeager. Anyone have any comments or corrections to these minutes? If not, motion to approve, please.
I'll make a motion to approve.
And I'll second.
And a second.
Lewis.
Okay. And Denise, would you call the roll on this, please?
Yes. Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Ms. Rohrbach?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
Harry?
Okay. Great. Thank you. We have 4 resolutions. Only three of which we'll get to. The surrounding one is going to require a little bit of discussion. But first is the 2022 resolution adopting emergency remote meeting protocol procedures and requirements for public participation at remote meetings. So this was a short resolution. John, you want to say anything about this?
The same thing. Since the governor didn't extend, he declared another health emergency. If you recall last year, the legislature, the DCA adopted regulations that allow these virtual meetings to take place under certain circumstances. One of the circumstances, if there's a state of a health emergency. So the interesting thing would have been when the legislature refused to extend it, what if the governor hadn't declared a new health emergency? Then we would have had to go back to in-person meetings. But he declared a new health emergency. So under the DCA rules, we can have these virtual meetings if you adopt this resolution. Now, put that aside for a second. That's why you guys need to adopt the resolution. At some point, hopefully, we're no longer going to have a state of emergency. We're no longer going to have a health emergency. So I've been asked by various board members in different boards, can some board members continue to participate electronically? So my answer is, before we had any of this COVID stuff, and before we only had like regular hurricanes and things like that, and snowstorms that would shut a meeting down, I wrote an article which rendered an opinion that administratively a board can even meet under the Open Public Meetings Act over the phone. But if you're going to have a hearing on an application, there's no law on it, but I gave support in this opinion that if you could hear and you had to also be able to see, hear and see the witnesses and be able to see the exhibits, then you could actually have some members participating virtually. People are calling it a hybrid meeting. In my opinion, it's not a hybrid meeting. It's an in-person meeting because you need someone in the meeting room. So public can be in the meeting room, presumably the secretary, maybe the chairman or the vice chair. I'm not exactly sure about that. I haven't figured out, do I need a majority of people in person? I don't think so. I think if you had one board member there and it had the board secretary, that would be the in-person meeting, as long as the public can go and other people can still participate virtually. This way, if you're away, you don't have to miss a meeting, but we will bridge that gap when we get to it. For now, this resolution needs to be adopted to have a true virtual meeting, which is what we're having tonight. Tom, that's probably longer than you wanted, but that's the full enchilada.
All right, great. Thanks.
Was this resolution in the box? Because I did not see it.
I don't see it either. I was just going to say the same thing. I don't have that one.
You didn't have
it there? I just have the in-person virtual dates.
That may have been the one you just sent to Tom and I in an email.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. I apologize.
Is it long? Could it be read into the record, or is it too long for that?
A, it's too long, but B, it's the identical resolution that you guys adopted last year. The only difference is that the adoption date's going to be tonight.
And it has this year's meeting dates in it.
Didn't he say again?
And it has this year's meeting dates in the resolution.
So basically, if it had never been adopted before, I would have said, yeah, it's got to be read. But since it was adopted once already up, and there it is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you go back and put it up?
Can you see it now? Am I on the wrong screen? Can you see it now?
There you go.
Now you're in the right screen.
All right. I'll give you a minute to read it.
I don't have a resolution. You're saying a resolution is on the screen?
No, that's the resolution establishing the meeting dates. We're looking for the resolution adopting the emergency remote meeting protocols.
This one I have. That's not that one.
You don't have it open either. Yeah.
Establishing meeting schedule. Okay, let me go.
That one I have in the box.
Let me go back and find that one.
Tom, I'm pretty sure that Denise included this one with all the professional appointment resolutions that she emailed both of us. I'll tell you what, we can't screw this one up, or we can't have the meeting. Denise, I'm going to ask you to read this resolution into the record.
Okay. So this is for the Clinton Township Board of Adjustment resolution establishing.
Loud, Denise, loud.
Resolution establishing the meeting schedule for 2022, whereas the municipal land use law, NJSA.
No, Denise, that's not the right resolution. We're talking about the resolution adopting the emergency remote meeting protocols.
Well, John, you had that in this resolution.
That resolution, no. I don't believe that. We're not just looking for a reference to COVID and the fact that we have an option of having an in-person or a virtual meeting. There's a resolution that was adopted last year that has to be adopted this year that establishes the emergency remote meeting protocols and procedures and requirements for public participation.
Okay, you're right. You're right. That one is not in there, and I don't have it in front of me.
Right. Hold on.
Do you remember when we adopted it in 2021?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you as soon as I get to it.
We did it at the reorg meeting.
Are you sure?
No, we did it during the year because the DCA regulations were not in place at the time of reorg.
Are you sure they weren't in place?
Oh, no. She's right. It was the reorg. You've lost a year. It's the COVID timeblindness effect. Wow. You're thinking of 2020.
Hey, do you have it? You read it then, nice and slowly and loudly.
Pulling it up. I see the file. It's just opening now. Okay, yeah. John or Tom, are you able to make it so I can share my screen? Because then I can just put it on the display rather than reading it.
That'd be great.
No, I don't know. If you mail it to me, I'll bring it up.
Okay, I'll do that.
I apologize. I don't have enough bandwidth to open Box and WebEx.
No problem.
No problem. All right.
You're right. I lost a year. It was in the middle of 2020.
I've done that so many times over the last year now. Wow. I say like, oh yeah, it was, you know, they didn't have that because COVID started really in March. And then I remember it was a whole year and a half ago, 2 years ago now. Yeah. All right, Tom, it's on its way to you.
Crazy.
Okay. All right, here it is. Download. Click. Open. Okay, and share screen to share. And let's see, there it is. Can you see my screen?
Yeah, we saw the nice ski picture first.
Yep.
Yeah. And this is 4 pages long, so I will give you a minute.
It's a long one.
Let me do this.
You want me to speed read it?
Yeah, you can start reading. I'm going to forward this to all board members, I think.
So, whereas NJAC, which is the Administrative Code 5:39-1, which is rules governing emergency remote meeting protocols for local public bodies, were adopted to ensure that local bodies can continue to conduct official business in an open and transparent manner whenever a declared emergency exists that prohibits physical attendance by members of the public. Whereas a declared emergency under the rules means a public health emergency pursuant to the Health Powers Act, or a state of emergency pursuant to, I cite the law, or both, or a state or local disaster emergency, which has been declared by the governor and is in effect. Whereas the regulation permits a local public body to hold a remote public meeting to conduct public business during a declared emergency if the emergency reasonably prevents a local public body from safely conducting public business at a physical location with members of the public present. Whereas if during a declared emergency, the Clinton Township Board of Adjustment holds a physical meeting in a location where, pursuant to state and federal guidelines, meant to mitigate risk, capacity restrictions are required to reduce the number of individuals that can be present at the meeting. The board shall either, one, hold the public meeting at another location with adequate capacity for the reasonable expected attendance by the public, or B, hold the meeting as both an in-person and remote meeting. Whereas a public meeting held solely in person without a remote access alternative provided shall not prohibit members of the public from attending in person. Whereas adequate notice of the remote public meeting shall also include, in addition to the Open Public Meetings Act requirement, a clear and concise instructions for accessing the remote public meeting, the means for making public comment, and how to access any public documents on the township's website in the manner set forth in the regulation. Whereas at the commencement of a remote public meeting, the chair or the chair's designee, or in his or her absence, the secretary, shall announce publicly and shall cause to be entered into the minutes an accurate statement regarding adequate and electronic notice, or an explanation of the reasons or reasons such notice was not adequately provided for as set forth in the regulation. Whereas prior to the commencement of a remote public meeting, the board shall make a copy of the agenda available to the public for download on the township's website, and shall post a copy of same at the building where the meeting otherwise would be held, including posting of same at any designated and clearly delineated handicap accessible entrance to the building by no later than 3 p.m. on the date of the meeting. Whereas the content of the electronic notice shall be posted on the main access door of the building where the public would routinely attend public meetings of the local body in person, and the notice must be viewable from outside. Whereas the electronic communications used for a remote public meeting shall have a function that allows the board to mute the audio of all members of the public, as well as allow members of the public to mute themselves, and same shall be announced at the beginning of every remote public meeting. Whereas pursuant to the regulation, if the board holds a remote meeting to conduct public business, it shall use electronic communications technology routinely used in business settings that can be assessed by the public at no cost, and with participant capacity consistent with the reasonable expectations of the board for the type of public meeting being held, and such participant capacity shall, at a minimum, not be limited to fewer than 50 public participants, not including persons required to be present to conduct the business of the board, such as the board members, board professionals, and all members of the applicant's team. Whereas remote public meetings may be held by the board in a format as selected by the board, by means including but not limited to electronic communication platforms with video or audio or live streaming via the internet, and shall additionally provide a telephonic conference line to allow members of the public to dial in by telephone to listen and provide public comment. And whereas when the board holds a remote public meeting, it shall allow members of the public to ask questions by audio and video if the meeting is being held over both. Whereas any remote public meeting where sworn testimony is being taken shall be broadcast by video as well as audio, and all individuals giving sworn testimony, including members of the public making comments, shall appear by video. Whereas any presentation or documents that would otherwise be viewed by or made available to members of the public physically attending an in-person public meeting shall be made available on the internet website of the township or made visible during the video broadcast of the remote public meeting. Whereas except for quasi-judicial hearings on land development applications or similar public hearings, that would be like a hearing on a master plan, that's an editorial comment. In addition to making public comments in any remote public meetings, the board in advance of the remote public meeting shall allow public comments to be submitted to the clerk by electronic mail and in written letter form by a reasonable deadline to be established and posted on the website in advance of the public meeting. The reason you can't do that for a quasi-judicial hearing, it's got to be part of the record during the hearing. That's another editorial comment. Except for quasi-judicial hearings on land use development applications or similar public hearings, public comments submitted prior to the remote public meeting through electronic or regular mail shall be read aloud and addressed during the public portion in a meeting audible to all meeting participants and the public. Whereas a reasonable time limit shall be placed on the reading of individual written comments, all of which shall be read from the beginning until the established time limit is reached. Whereas in support of and respect of, thank you, an open, fair, and informed decision-making process, the board recognizes that civil, respectful, and courteous discourse and behavior are conducive to the democratic and harmonious airing of concerns in decision-making. Whereas in an effort to preserve the intent of open government and maintain a positive environment for citizens' input and board decision-making, policy and rules shall be established to promote civility and maintain decorum at an in-person public meeting and remote public meetings in accordance with the regulations. Whereas if a member of the public becomes disruptive during a remote public meeting, including during any period for public comment, the chair or the chair's designee, or in their absence, a secretary, shall mute or continue muting, or direct appropriate staff to mute or continue muting the disruptive member of the public and warn that continued disruption may result in the member of the public being prevented from speaking during the remote public meeting or removed from the remote public meeting. As an aside, at another board, we had a very obnoxious member of the public. We had to mute the guy, and then he did what I did. He started flashing up things on the screen, so we had to boot him. Whereas disruptive conduct in an in-public meeting or remote public meeting includes sustained inappropriate behavior, including but not necessarily limited to shouting, he did that, interruption, he did that, use of profanity, he did that. He also showed some pictures. Whereas any member of the public who continues to act in a disruptive manner at a remote public meeting after receiving an initial warning may be muted while other members of the public are allowed to proceed with their questions or comments. Whereas if time permits, the disruptive individual shall be allowed to speak after all of the members of the public have been given the opportunity to make comment. And if the person still remains disruptive, the individual may be muted or kept on mute for the remainder of the remote public hearing or removed from the public meeting. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the board that the standards and procedures for emergency remote public meetings as set forth in this resolution and as codified in the rules set forth in the regulation are hereby established and adopted. Be it further resolved that procedures and requirements for public participation are hereby established and adopted in order to safeguard public participation in any in-person or remote public meetings of the board and shall apply to all members of the public in attendance at any in-person public or remote public meeting of the board. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the board. The foregoing recitals are incorporated herein as if set forth in full, and this resolution shall take effect immediately, and that's why I want it read into the record and adopted tonight.
Thanks, John. John, just to clarify, I went back and looked, and we'll straighten it out later, but this wasn't the one that you had sent to Denise from Raritan. That was the confusion.
Right.
We'll straighten it out later. This is the one we want, though.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. You definitely want this, but you also need to adopt the one I sent to Denise from Raritan. That's setting the meeting dates, and you know what? I think after you get a vote on this, let's have Denise read that other one. I want everyone to understand what my suggested manner of deciding whether a meeting's in person or remote is. That's in the other resolution.
Okay. So let's
vote. So I move then to adopt the resolution as read in by John Drell.
A second.
Was that Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Ms. Rohrbach?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
Tom, can you now put that other resolution up, please?
Okay. And that's this one, right?
That's right. Because...
Okay.
So what we've done is when all these professional appointments occur, there are resolutions that are going to be adopted, but I never required that they be read into the record because it's the same resolution that's adopted every year.
Well, we have this one, though. We have a copy of this one.
I understand, but I'd like this one to be in the minutes, and I'd like any members of the public, I'd like this to be part of the public record because this is a change from prior years. This is the resolution establishing the meeting schedule, which you guys have voted on, the meeting schedule. But I want to read, whereas the Municipal Land Use Law, NJSA 40:55D-9, provides that the board shall schedule regular meetings not less than once per month. Whereas the Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-18, provides that at least once a year, within 7 days following the board's annual reorganizational meeting, or if there shall be no reorganizational meeting, then by January 10th of that year, the board shall post and mail to the township official newspaper and a newspaper of general circulation notice of the dates for its regularly scheduled meetings for the year. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Township, by the Clinton Township Board of Adjustment on January 24, 2022, as follows. Number one, this is no change. All regular meetings, unless otherwise indicated, shall be held on the fourth Monday of each month at 7 p.m. in the Council Chambers located on the third floor of the Public Safety Building located at 1370 Route 31 North, Allendale, New Jersey. Number two, this is different. Due to the COVID-19 global pandemic, the meeting may be held over the WebEx platform. Notice of such will be listed on the agenda, on the meeting agenda, and posted to the Township website 6 days prior to the meeting. So I want to explain what we're doing. Last year, when we met in public, we adopted this at reorg. Then when we met virtually, WebEx, we had to adopt another one. Then we went back to in-person, we had to adopt another one. So I figured, let's get one resolution that gives the board the option of if they want to go WebEx, they can do it. And how do people find out? Because it's on the agenda, and the agenda has to be up on the website 6 days prior to the meeting. Now, under the Open Public Meetings Act, actually, you don't even have to post an agenda for a regular scheduled meeting if you do this reorg resolution and it's published in the paper. As a matter of practice, what we've always done with the BOA and the PB is we post the agenda, but we analogize it to the provision in the Open Public Meetings Act, which says you have to have 48 hours notice of a meeting. So we've always said you got to get the agenda posted 48 hours beforehand. I'm just telling you that it really doesn't have to be done. Well, what I figured was if you're going to make a major call on whether you're going to be meeting virtually or not, and to be fair to the public and applicants and everything, you should post the agenda 6 days. So look, if I have the agenda done, change, no problem. But the agenda has to say 6 days beforehand, are you going WebEx or are you going in person? So does anyone have any questions about number two?
I don't read it the way that I think you then intended it, because I read it as the notice will be in the meeting agenda and notice will be posted on the website, not that the agenda will be posted on the website.
Okay, that's fine. That's how I intended. I intended what you just said.
Okay. So if the agenda for whatever reason is not posted, you just put the notice up there.
Correct. It doesn't matter if the agenda is not ready or not.
Okay. Now, yeah, you just put a note up
item
there.
Item three, I had Denise read into the record before, so keep on scrolling. Let's see if there's anything else we haven't read. Item five, that's the reorg will be held on January 23, and I have the same language in there. Option of doing it WebEx, because, again, we don't know how things are going to be in a year, believe it or not. And that's it. So I guess I'm going to make a motion to adopt this resolution, but I wanted it read into the record. And this resolution I'd like to have in the minutes, Denise, just like that other resolution.
So moved.
And a second?
I'll second.
That was Sharon?
Yes. Thank you. Dr. Lewis?
And
yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Ms. Rohrbach?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And that's Mr. Yeager, right? Did you call him?
I did.
We didn't hear you at the end.
Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. We all set with that? Great, thanks. All right, let's go on to Zinn is next. And since I'm sharing, let me bring that one up. I think I've got Zinn. No, it's not that one. I've got too many open.
You don't have to put up Zinn or
Clint Nag, right?
Clint Nag. You can stop sharing your screen.
Okay. Okay, next we're looking for a motion for Zinn Realty Resolution 2021-08 Version 3. Eligible members are McTiernan, Pfeffer, Rohrbach, and Stevens. So do you four have that? And does anyone have any corrections to this resolution?
No corrections. Draft three is acceptable to everyone involved.
Motion to adopt, please.
We need
make a motion.
Tiernan, Pfeffer, Rohrbacher, Stevens. Someone make a motion. Someone second.
We just did.
Stevens. Stevens made the motion. And a second, please.
Dan will second it.
Okay. And Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Ms. Rohrbacher?
Yes.
Yes, if you didn't call, if you called me.
Yes, I did. The motion carries.
Okay, thanks. Next, we have Clinton Agricultural Associates, Resolution 2021-09, Version 2. Eligible members are Lewis, McTiernan, Pfeffer, Stevens, and Yeager. And that, did I say Version 2? So does anyone have any corrections to that?
So Mr. Chairman,
I do.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Yeager, who's first? Go ahead.
Go ahead, Tom Yeager.
Go okay, let Tom, you. Please talk loudly.
Okay. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. I had questions, and I spoke to Jonathan earlier about this, about the cross-access easements, and as many that there may be on Lot 6 that services Lot 7 for access. My concern was trying to minimize those easements, and John did tell me that we will have the possibility or potential of looking at these easements and necessity of the easements after or when the site plan application has been made. The design will be fixed, then we'll have a chance to look at the cross-reference access easements. So that's the only comment I have, and look forward to looking closely, we'll say, at the cross-access easements.
So this is what
Tom Yeager, you have no changes to the resolution, is that correct?
No, there's going to be a change. Here's my suggestion. This is on page 12. It's condition 5. I'm going to read it and then give you the proposed additional language. Right now it says cross-access easements. The applicant shall provide and record cross-access easements for lots 6 and 7, period. What my suggestion is, after talking with Tom, is instead of the period, put a comma, the form of which shall be approved at the time of site plan review. That way, once you see exactly what they're coming in with, then you'll tell them, because the way it's worded right now is a little too broad, and maybe the applicant could say they have the right to decide where they are. Tom's concern was, in other words, Tom got me thinking, and I was like, maybe they won't give enough. Tom's concern is it might be too much. So by putting a comma in the words, the form of which shall be approved at the time of site plan review, we kick the can down the road, but we keep the decision making in the realm of the board and not simply the applicant. So that's my one suggested revision to this resolution tonight based on what Tom Yeager brought up to me.
And I accept that, John.
I had one note as well. I don't really know how I feel about it one way or the other, but if you look at page 12, 6B, the no site contractors or heavy equipment as defined by weight shall be permitted, meaning nothing larger than a rubber tire backhoe. When we said that, I remember us saying it. My thought was that someone was going to look up the weight of a rubber tire backhoe and put a number in, not that we were going to state no heavier than a rubber tire backhoe.
Well, put it this way. I put that in right out of my notes.
Yeah.
So I missed the nuance that someone was going to look it up, but I don't think anyone looked it up.
I guess now, not. I mean, my concern is that you could probably find a rubber tire backhoe that is any weight if you tried hard enough.
So I have a suggestion. First, Denise. How is Clinton Ag with their escrow? Are they all caught up?
Yes, right now they are. They don't have a lot to spare, but yes.
Because, I mean, I don't think it would kill them if we put this off another month. I mean, listen, it's up to the board. So if it means enough to you, David, or if it means enough to any board members, I would kick this one to Larry the board engineer and have him look up how much of your typical rubber tired backhoe, you know, weighs. And then, David, I can informally talk with you about it, and we'll put something in here. We get the draft out, you know, nice and early. Which
I don't know how much I care, to be perfectly honest, but I know that the condition originally came from Tom Yeager, I believe. So,
yeah.
Tom, did you have thoughts on this?
Tom, what do you think about this? I'm going to read the condition, Tom. It's condition 6B on page 12. And first of all, the condition's entitled Flex Space Use Restrictions. And then it says the following use restrictions shall apply to the flex space. B says no site contractors or heavy equipment, paren, as defined by weight, in paren, shall be permitted. We could put a period there, but in my notes, it said, and I added from parentheses, meaning nothing larger than a rubber tire backhoe, in paren. So I think David's right. I think this came from you, Tom. So what's your thoughts on this?
Well, the only thing that I might add to that, you know, if we're talking about weight or size of the piece of equipment,
I guess, are you comfortable with it saying that as opposed to having a number that we use based off of that metric?
Well, the only thing we as defined by weight is in that suggestion right now, or in that item B, you know, as defined by weight.
Tom, hold on. What David is saying is, unless you define weight, the condition means nothing. So I'm going to read the condition, and I'm going to strike out the last language in the parentheses. Here's what the condition would say. Note. No site contractors or heavy equipment, paren, as defined by weight, and paren, shall be permitted. What does that mean? It means no site contractor shall be permitted, okay, but no heavy equipment as defined by weight. Well, what's the definition of weight? In my notes, it said, weight's defined as nothing larger than a rubber tire backhoe. That was, to me, a definition of weight, but David is raising the question, maybe they have really big rubber tire backhoes, and maybe they have small ones. I don't know. Tom, you're an engineer and a surveyor. Do rubber tire backhoes come in different weights?
Different sizes, yes.
So
my question is more direct than that. It has nothing to do with weight. It's more specific. What is heavy equipment? There is a definition because the taxes can be assigned by that for heavy equipment on roads, and they do charge them for that. So what is the definition of heavy equipment? It's not necessarily weight. It's what is the definition of heavy equipment? And that's whatever however that defines it is what they can't put in there.
I understand. But what the board said the night of this approval was heavy equipment as defined by weight. That's what the board said.
And then we told them that we meant by that nothing heavier than a rubber tire backhoe.
I believe that David is onto something here. My suggestion is to table this resolution and maybe create a subcommittee of three people, not including me, and talk to Larry Blevier and put in a weight, because otherwise the condition's ambiguous. So I'm going to suggest that because the people that are qualified to vote on this are Lewis, McTiernan, Pfeffer, Stevens, and Yeager. I'd like, Tom, can you have those five polled by Denise and see if they want to table this and put a definition of weight, or if they want to leave this as is, or if they want to make some other change in it?
Sure. And I'm recused, so I'm not going to say anything on this. Denise, could you ask that question of the five, please? The question is, vote as stand, or put this off and discuss it between now and next meeting.
Tom, may I ask a procedural question before that vote is taken?
Yep.
I was at that meeting and in August, and I voted no on this vote. And is that the reason I'm not supposed to vote on the resolution?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
But that means the resolution is wrong. Because on page 13, I have those opposed, no. And what you're telling me, it should say those opposed, Rohrbach.
Yes.
So that's another revision I have to make, right?
Yes. That's correct, because I have my notes, yes.
And that's reflected in Denise's minutes.
Oh, I know, but it's reflected in my resolution. Thank you for telling me.
Thank you.
And just a note before we do the vote, a point to make. Neither the applicant nor their professionals have been...
Louder, Denise.
Neither the applicant nor the professionals have been asking for the resolution. So it's not a time constraint is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, do we even need a straw poll, or can we just move to do it and people can vote no if they don't want to table it?
Hold on for 1 second. I get a potential solution. Paul Plevier, Larry Mobile.
Just to confirm, you'd like to call Larry Plevier, Mobile?
Yes.
Calling Larry Plevier, Mobile.
David, I'm not sure voting no is the right
way. I'm tabling it, not on the resolution.
Hey, Larry, sorry to bug you. I'm at the Clinton Township Board of Adjustment meeting virtual, and we're trying to get the Clinton Ag resolution adopted. I need 2 minutes of your time. Can I have 2 minutes of your time? Okay. I have a condition on page 12, and I got it out of my notes. And this is dealing with the flex space use restrictions. It's condition 6B as in boy. And the way it's worded right now is no site contractors or heavy equipment, paren, as defined by weight, in paren, shall be permitted. And then I have in parentheses, meaning nothing larger than a rubber tire backhoe, in paren. What David Steffer is suggesting, and I think he might be right, is that second step in the parens was a note to myself that the board meant nothing larger than a rubber tire backhoe, but basically either I or someone was supposed to find out how much a rubber tire backhoe weighs. So since you're an engineer, how much is your typical rubber tire backhoe weigh? I understand. Look, we could leave the rubber tire backhoe in there, but what they're saying is, what if you have a huge rubber tire backhoe versus a small rubber tire backhoe? I would leave that language in there, but also add a weight qualifier after hearing what David Pfeffer had to say. I mean, most of the rubber tire backhoes I see, you know, you see during, road work. So that's a typical size. I'm not talking about like a major Yabo one that you would use for mining. And I'm not talking about like a mini one that landscapers use. I want the weight for a typical rubber tire backhoe that you'd see used in a street project. 15,000 pounds.
Okay.
About 7.5 tons. Larry, thank you very much. Okay. He said to send his regards, but so, David, how about this, David and Tom? No site contractors or heavy equipment as defined by weight shall be permitted, meaning nothing larger than a 15,000-pound rubber tire backup.
That sounds good.
Tom, how's that sound to you?
Fine.
Okay. Dan McTiernan, how does it sound to you?
Sounds good to me, John.
How about Sharon?
I'm good.
Cheryl Lewis, how does it sound to you?
Sounds good.
Okay, so we got three revisions. We got two revisions in condition six, pardon me, one in condition five, one in condition 6B, and we're adding Heidi's name to the people who voted no. I'm praying someone will make a motion to adopt this resolution as revised.
So moved.
I'll second.
Tom Yeager, second.
I think Sharon already seconded.
Oh.
And Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr.
Denise, we can't hear you.
She's actually okay, John. It's your line.
No, I couldn't hear her this time either.
Also, Dan couldn't hear her because she called his name. He didn't vote again.
I didn't hear her, but I'll vote yes.
Wait. I didn't call his name yet.
Well, maybe that's why I didn't vote yes. Maybe that's why
I didn't. Let me start from the beginning. Dr. Lewis?
You previously voted yes.
Okay.
Yes. I was muted. Yes.
Okay. Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Okay, Denise.
Excellent.
Sometime tomorrow, you'll get a version 3. The adopted version is going to be version 3 with a 124 date on it, okay? I will be sending that to you.
Okay, so ready to move on? The next item on the agenda is going to be different than it is listed here. Let me just read this for the record. Dismissal of BOA application 2020-5 with prejudice due to default of resolution number 2021-04, dismissing application number BOA 2020-05 without prejudice, subject to condition requiring reimbursement of attorney fees and expenses. So just a brief recap, and then I'll let Denise fill in the details. At the time that we passed this resolution dismissing this, one of the conditions was that Mr. Serrani was going to pay his escrows, et cetera, and if he didn't pay them by a certain time, we're going to change the resolution from one without prejudice, meaning he could come back and plead his case again, to one with prejudice, meaning he could not come back again.
Tom, it wasn't just the escrow. It was also the objector's attorney's fees.
Right, but it's the escrow that's the issue here that we're talking about tonight, because we're not tracking the amount to which he's paying the objectors. That's not part of what we're tracking, John. Am I correct on that? We have no knowledge, firsthand knowledge of whether he's...
We do have knowledge, but we got a letter sent in by Steve Gruenberg saying that they weren't paid. So... keep on going, Tom, but it's both.
All right, so maybe that's a new piece. So Denise and I discussed...
I'm sorry, do you want me to leave the room?
No, just don't vote on anything. Just sit tight.
Okay.
Knock off your camera. Good idea.
Okay. So, I'll leave. Are you going to know when to come back?
Perhaps Denise could text me.
Okay. And so Denise and I discussed the fact that the board, the escrow, had not been paid. We talked about giving Mr. Serrani until, I think it was 10 days before this meeting in order to pay. Otherwise, we were going to recommend a discussion and a vote tonight to turn this into a resolution dismissal with prejudice. Now, since then, Denise, can you explain what's happened with the payments, please?
Before Denise does that, Mr. Serrani called me, so I'd like to relay the conversation I had with him, because he asked me what were the consequences of not paying the escrow and getting a dismissal with prejudice and not paying the other attorney's fees and getting a dismissal with prejudice, because he said that, you know, maybe I'm not going to pursue this anymore because apparently he's having some problems out at the CADB, the County Agricultural Development Board. They're not buying the fact that their rule allows farm labor in separate building, that it maybe have to be attached to the barn. So I said, well, here's how I see what could happen. If you don't pay the escrow, which pays me, and you don't pay Uber's fees,
I can hardly hear you, John.
Prejudice, which would bar you and any subsequent purchaser from ever trying to do this. So that perked him up a little because he hadn't thought about the fact that it could bar a subsequent purchaser. He said, but what if I don't care about that? Why should I pay either then? I said, well, if you don't pay the escrow, the township's going to sue you. The township's not going to sit back, okay, and pay me the money that I'm owed and then not sue you for it. So he said, well, it's an easy decision to pay the escrow. It's a harder decision to pay the attorney's fees. So I said, well, look, you think about what you're going to do. Now let's hear from Denise.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So a letter was sent to Mr. Serrani, as Tom said, and requesting payment. So he did send in a payment, but it was a little bit short. The reason it was a little bit short is because I inadvertently put the wrong amount in the letter to him. Instead of putting the full amount that I needed, which would have been $3,273, I told him $2,500, which is what his first payment was. So he still owes $723, which I spoke to him this afternoon, explained the situation, and I said that I would ask the board to hold off on dismissing the application with prejudice for this meeting, but that the additional funds would have to be received. Otherwise, the application would be dismissed with prejudice at the next meeting. And he said that.
And Denise, just to clarify, the shortfall is because of a clerical error on your part, not because he said, I'm not going to pay. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Right. So every indication is he's going to pay that last $700, correct?
Yes. He told me he would be in this week with it.
Okay. Now, John, you're saying that he still owes the objectors.
This is what I'm saying. Let him come in. First of all, my strong recommendation is to table this to your next meeting.
Right.
Let him come in and pay the $700. Then let Denise call Steve Gruenberg and see how that's going.
Right. Agreed. Agreed. I think that's the right thing to do, and then we'll come back and discuss it next meeting. Okay. Does anyone have any problems with this? Any thoughts to go a different route? Okay. All right. So I'm sure we'll hear more about this at the next meeting. Okay. Before we get to public hearing on St. Clair, because I know two people are going to leave because they're going to be recused, let's switch to the annual report, which I distributed. I got just a couple of
Denise text Heidi to get Heidi back.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And so I got a couple minor, very minor comments on the annual report. There was one section in here, and David Pfeffer, this was you, yep, made a suggestion about directional signs off-site. And I sent you an email with some sections from the ordinance saying, is this what you had in mind? Is this what you had in mind?
Yeah, I apologize. I never got back to you on that.
Yeah, so what do you want to do? We could do a couple things. We could put this off for a month, and you could take some time, see if you really want to flesh out a recommendation, or we could take it out and pass the rest of the report as it stands. Ball's in your court.
I'd like to get it in there. Can you just give me a minute to read over?
Can I make a suggestion? Just table it. Table it for the next meeting so you don't have to do it in a rush.
David, we're not going to do this in a minute here. It's going to take some time, I think, for you to go through, because I'm going to want to ask you some questions about what you have in mind. So if we're going to do it, let's do it right. Okay. All right. So we'll put this off till next month. And thanks for anyone who sent me any comments. Okay. So that's it for all the administrative work. And we're going to move on to public hearing for St. Clair. I think we have two people that are going to recuse. Is that correct, Mr. Pfeffer and Mr. Yeager?
Correct for me. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So thank you for joining, and let the record reflect that 18, you two are dropping off.
Yep. Have a good evening, everyone.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Okay. Next up, St. Clair Real Estate doing business as Round Valley Dentistry. Let me just read this in. Application BOA 2021-10. Applicant is seeking to amend the previously approved site plan to add an additional 204 square feet of office space, which will replace the existing drive-through area previously used by the former bank for intermittent use by a specialist for particularized dentistry procedures. The applicant is also requesting variances and additional wall-mounted sign. Okay, the floor is yours. And Ms. Krasinski, is that correct?
That's very, very close. Krasinski, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. As the chairman indicated, I'm here tonight representing the applicant, St. Clair Real Estate LLC, doing business as Round Valley Dentistry. The application concerns the property located at 87 Beaver Avenue. And this property, as I'm sure you all know, where it's located, it's across from Belvedere Avenue. It's about a half an acre in size. It's bounded by Highway 31 to the rear and the west, and it's wooded in area to the east. This property is the old TD Bank, and the applicant was here back in 2017 for a site plan waiver and various approvals in order to turn it into what is now the existing dentist office. The approvals that were granted back in 2017 were granted by way of Resolution 2017-3, and they referred to C1 and C2 relief.
Excuse me just a second.
Sure.
Just point of clarification. That was a resolution by the planning board, correct? Not by this board. And Dan McTiernan, I think, was on the planning board at that time. So, Dan, you're seeing this both sides. I didn't want people to think this was a resolution that we previously seen on this board. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I was on the planning board at the time.
Yep.
Right. Okay, so that planning board resolution, again, it was 2017-3, granted a number of relief. The C1 relief that was granted by the planning board was for lot area. The minimum lot area required is 75,000 square feet, and the lot area that exists is 21,676 square feet. And I neglected to mention the property is located in the C1 zone, so all of these bulk requirements pertain to the requirements of the C1 zone. So that was one C1 relief that was granted from lot area. The second was from impervious coverage, maximum impervious coverage. The maximum allowed is 40%, and the maximum or the amount that was granted back in 2017 was 51.47%. There was also relief granted from the front yard setback from Beaver Avenue. 40 feet is required. 25.4 feet to the existing building was granted. And the front yard setback from Route 31, again, 40 feet is required, and 17.5 feet existed. There were also some C2 variances that the planning board granted. Those were from minimum parking space requirements. The parking that was associated with the existing dental office back in 2017 was 22 parking spaces. The dental office provided for 18. So there was a variance granted for 4 parking spaces. And the other C2 variance was from sign area on the freestanding sign. The maximum freestanding sign area allowed is 25 square feet, and the planning board granted a variance for 92 square feet. So we're here tonight to ask the board for approval of the following. A very, what we consider to be minimal addition to the existing building. It's approximately 196 square feet. And you'll hear some testimony from our architect with regard to the specifics on that. Also some additional signage, and there'll be some landscaping that we're proposing in order to comply both with your ordinance requirements as well as to mitigate some of the issues that the board may deem exist as a result of this addition. The relief that we're asking for is for preliminary and final site plan approval. We are also asking for C variances. One of them is from the minimum side yard setback from Beaver Avenue. Again, that's a 40-foot requirement. The addition will be located 30.91 feet from the front yard. Same front yard setback from Route 31. Again, that's a 40-foot requirement. We will be approximately 34 feet from that front yard setback line. Another new variance. This is from floor area ratio. So the C1 zone allows for a 15% floor area ratio. What currently exists is 14.62%. And what kicked us to the zoning board for this application and why we're not back before the planning board as we were originally is because that floor area ratio will now be increased very minimally to 15.49% from the existing 14.62. And that's a D4 variance. And again, that's why we're here before this board.
Can I just chime in for 1 minute? You did a very nice job of laying out what the planning board did. I just want to make the board aware that, in my opinion, all those variances that the planning board granted, they run with the land. They do not need to get new variances. Whatever the planning board granted, they still have. So I believe that Ms. Kaczynski is correct that the only new relief they need, besides preliminary and final site plan for their addition, are those two front yard setback variances as a result of the addition, and this floor area ratio variance, because under the municipal land use law, if an applicant seeks an FAR, a floor area ratio variance, it's a D variance. It's a D6, it's a D4 variance. And that's why they're here. And so I'm going to suggest that everyone with a great background, but forget about all the other relief that was granted. Just focus on what you have tonight. You got signage and you got an addition.
I think, John, if I could just clarify, I think we have two more points of relief that we need.
You need something for parking, and you need something, right, so go ahead, but I'm talking about the bulk.
Yep, exactly. So then we also need a variance for one additional parking space. As I said, there was 18 originally required. I'm sorry, 22 originally required. And 18 was provided. By way of this addition, that requires an additional parking space. So again, we're not looking to provide any additional parking. It will remain at 18. But since the addition kicks it up to 23 being required, we need that one additional parking space variance. And then the last one came as a result of, I believe it was the letter of your landscape architect. We'll address each one of your review letters or each one of your professionals' review letters as we go through. But in that, he identified that there is insufficient front yard area to provide the buffering that's required by your ordinance. So we are requesting a variance, and that would be a variance from the buffer requirements of the ordinance section 165-77G and also 165-77K, parens 7, close parens, parens A, close parens, and bracket 1, close bracket. So again, that was a waiver.
Quick question to Tom Behrens before we get everyone sworn in. Section 77, is that the zoning ordinance or is that the site plan ordinance?
Let me verify. Give me a moment. Yeah. I tend to think that it's. Let me verify. Give me 1 minute.
Just verify it, because those two, instead of being variances, they might be exceptions.
While he's looking, this is Sharon. Why is the impervious coverage not a concern? Why is it not included?
Can't hear you.
The impervious coverage. Right, it's going to increase, I would think. I mean, I'm trying to understand why that didn't increase with the addition of the room. Is it because of the
driveway? Explain that. The reason the floor area ratio increased but the impervious coverage didn't is because they're converting this drive-through.
Okay, so it
already had
the impervious,
it had the paving and everything, okay. So it was already there. But because they're converting it to floor area, the floor area ratio goes up with the impervious staying the same. I believe that's what they're going to tell you.
Okay, thank you.
That's correct, John. Thanks.
John, if I can clarify, section 165-77 of the ordinance is within the design standards, which are contained in Part 6, subdivision and site plan review.
Yeah. So you don't need a variance for that landscaping stuff. You need exceptions for that landscaping stuff.
Okay. I had a waiver noted, so we'll note it as an exception.
Right. Yeah, by the way, we should have said, I reviewed the content of the notice, and it was satisfactory. Denise, do you review the returns?
Yes, I did. Yes.
And it was satisfactory?
Yes.
At this point, why don't we get everyone sworn in who's going to testify? I know that on behalf of the board, we have Mr. Behrens, who's the board's planning expert, and I see Mr. Oliva, who's one of the board's landscape architectural experts, and congratulations, by the way, because you were formally appointed to that tonight. And then who do we have on behalf of the applicant testifying?
We have Mr. Ingram, we have Mr. Milo, and we also have Mr. Haberly. So I think I see I see all three. They're all three here.
Okay, do me a favor.
Guys, want to raise your...
Yeah, raise your hand so I can see you. Oh, there you are. Okay. So first let me ask, okay, everyone raise your right hand. And does everyone swear the testimony you're going to give in this proceeding tonight is going to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
So Mr. Haberly, I see your name up there, but can you spell it for the record, please?
Absolutely. It's HAEBERLE.
And what is your relationship to either the applicant, to the applicant? Are you an expert? Are you a fact witness? Are you the managing member of the LLC?
I am the architect of record.
Okay, you're the architectural expert. Okay, and now I'm looking at Mr. How do you pronounce your name? Milo?
Oh, it's Milo.
Milo. And I know we see your name, but can you spell your name for the record?
Spelled M-I-E-L-O.
And what's your relationship to the applicant?
I am the owner of the company.
Okay, so are you the managing member of St. Clair Real Estate LLC?
Correct, managing partner.
Okay, managing partner. Let me just get this stuff down. Mr. Ingram, I'm coming to you in 1 minute.
Oh, come on, we all know Wayne.
The hand's running slow tonight. Okay, Mr. Ingram, can you introduce yourself to the board, even though they already know you, spell your last name, and in what capacities are you going to be testifying tonight?
Sure. Last name is Ingram, I-N-G-R-A-M, and I am the applicant's engineer and planner testifying in those capacities tonight.
Okay, and then Mr. Behrens.
Tom Behrens, last name, B-E-H-R-E-N-S, board planner with Burgess Associates.
Mr. Oliva.
My name's John Olivo, O-L-I-V-O, board landscape architect from Bosenberg Landscape Architects.
Are you an A-S-L-A?
Actually, New Jersey would be an LLA, licensed landscape architect, 938. Also, I am also an ASLA member, so...
Okay, and Mr. Behrens, are you also an AICP?
PP and AICP, correct.
Both. Okay. Yeah. And Mr. Ingram, you're just a PP. You're a PE and a PP, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Kaczynski, take it away.
Okay. I'd like to call Mr. Milo.
Just before we do it, I want to, for the record, if I could, is there anyone in the public that's interested in this application? I can see all of the names and pictures of people that are logged in, and they all seem to be either with the board or the applicant. But for the record, I want to ask the question, and I see none. And we do need to, at some point, qualify Mr. Haberly and Mr. Ingram. We've qualified before, but we can do that. So go ahead, Ms. Krasinski. I'm saying that wrong again, but go ahead.
That's quite all right, please. It's been an issue all my life. Okay, so Mr. Milo, I thank John for going through our preliminary questions. Why don't you give the board a benefit of your history with the property?
We have been in continued operation in the area of Clinton since October 2018. We converted TD Bank, as Mr. Drill had stated, and we continue to grow. And so now we're trying to kind of make ourselves fit.
Okay, wonderful. So I'm actually going to start with your numbers of employees, just to kind of give the board an overview of what the day-to-day operations at your site currently is like. So how many employees do you have?
Total, we have quite a few part-time employees. So we have 15 total, if you spread it out amongst all the part-timers.
Okay. And at any one time, how many and what staff are present on your site?
We typically limit to 8 individuals.
Okay. And those individuals are?
You'll have 2 receptionists, 2 doctors, 2 hygienists, and 2 dental assistants.
Okay. And those 8 people would serve how many patients at a time?
Typically, you're going to have 1 patient per provider. So you'd have 2 for hygiene, 2 for the dental team. So you'd have 4 total.
Okay. So at any one time or any one shift, let's call it, on a typical day, you're going to have 12 people on site.
That is correct.
Okay. Quickly,
how long is the shift? In other words, 12 people for, are they there for a half hour, an hour before there's a changeover of patients?
Yeah, so generally it's a continual running situation. So we schedule, vertically, meaning we go hour by hour. Each doctor, each hygienist starts at the same time. So if you just think about it that way, each hour we have a changeover of 4 patients per hour that come and go. And the 8 providers and employees stay put. So they're basically servicing the 4 individuals that come and go.
So to answer John's question, the shift would be a day. Is that correct?
Roger that, yeah. So essentially, and everything varies, but we think of just basically by the hour. So sometimes you'll have an 8-hour day, sometimes you'll have a 6, but they vary from day to day.
Let's go into that. So what are your days and hours of operation?
Currently, Monday, we're working 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday, we're working noon to 8 p.m. Wednesday, which we recently just expanded, we're trying to work an 8 to 8, 12-hour day. Thursday, we work 9 to 5. And Friday, we work 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Oh, and we do work typically 1 Saturday per month. And that's also 8 to 1.
8 to 1. Okay, so
when the one doctor and the one hygienist are seeing the one patient and they get near the end of their hour or whatever, do you have 3 more patients waiting in the waiting room?
And unfortunately, we try to do a kind of a classic scheduling situation. So to account for, sterilization of rooms and so forth, usually patients are done about 15 minutes before the next patient is set to arrive. So there's actually very little overlap between patients. So let's say we have an 8 a.m. patient. An 8 a.m. patient will be done, let's say, 8:45. And you'll typically then have the next patient showing up probably about 5 or 10 minutes early. So usually they're just, just missing each other.
Okay. To go back to your schedule, you said you were making a change on Wednesdays for a 12-hour day from 8 to 8. What was your previous Wednesday schedule?
We were working, Wednesday was typically the noon to 8.
Okay, so you're adding about 4 hours there to that shift.
Correct.
Okay. Let's go back to, so you said that you had approximately 12 people inside the office at any one time. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you said there's about a 15-minute lag time between patients arriving and leaving.
Correct.
Has that changed or has that changed at all during COVID times?
Yeah, that's been particularly difficult because the guidelines added a minimum of 10 minutes to that, changing air in the room and so forth. So that was particularly difficult on all the providers.
Can you explain to the board what you have to do during that time period in order to properly sterilize and do whatever else you need to do?
Well, pre-COVID, you have a wipe and spray situation. So what happens is when the assistant completes their work or the hygienist completes their work, they'll actually spray all the equipment with a particular type of spray that has to sit for about 5 or 7 minutes before you can wipe it. The wiping process takes about another 2 to 3 minutes. And then just the regular room changeover, barriers and so forth. Usually it takes them only about 10 minutes total. And the 5 minutes is just to get the room set up for the next person who comes in. With COVID, I believe they were originally asking for half an hour, and they scaled that back. So we used to we don't have them in all the rooms now. We had HEPA filters in every single room to change the air out, and that was typically half an hour between patients.
Okay, so the situation surrounding COVID have made it difficult for you to continue your normal operations.
Correct.
Is that safe to say?
Correct.
Okay. So let's talk about then why you're making this application.
Before you do that, do you have the Planning Board Resolution 2017-03 with you?
I do.
Can you turn to condition C5?
Yep.
Can you read that into the record? Because I think you're going to have to make that part of your part of the application tonight. I think I know the answer, which is probably why you're expanding. But can you read condition C5?
Okay, so condition C5 states there should be a limitation on the number of employees on the property at any one time to 6. The applicant shall be required to apply for and obtain further site plan / waiver of site plan, as well as variance approval from the board and or the Zoning Board of Adjustment, as the case may be, A, prior to any expansion of the number of patient chairs on the property beyond 4, B, prior to increase in the number of employees on the property at any one time to more than 6, and or C, prior to any increase in the footprint and or floor area of the building beyond that included as part of the proposed development.
This is the reason that you've made this application, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, keep on going, thanks.
Among others, but thank you. Okay, so in addition to that, Mr. Mueller, from an operational perspective, why are you making this application?
Well, what typically happens when you have a dental office that's, again, vertically scheduled like that, where every patient follows the patient before, if anything should happen during that day that causes you to have an overage, you know, let's say a patient shows up late or you have equipment malfunction, patient will stop bleeding, so forth, you have to then go into the next person's scheduled time, and it leaves no place to put that patient. And so essentially it just keeps pushing the day back further and further. The concept of what we call a runover room is kind of critical to dentistry. It's like having a little bit of slack in the line. So if, let's say, one person is running over in their room, they can then move over into an empty room. And again, if you have someone who's not, you know, is not stopping bleeding and so forth, you can leave them in one room, monitor them, and then move the next patient into the runover room. Same thing happens for emergencies. You know, each week we schedule 2 to 3 open appointments. We leave them there in case you have emergencies. But if we have more than one emergency per day, we have no place to put them. And that really clamps down on us if we don't have at least one accessory runover room to take that overflow. Mechanical failure, same thing. If the x-ray system breaks down, you know, you have an entire day you have to cancel on one of the operatories. And then lastly, we're considering bringing in a specialist, you know, periodontist, typically 1 or 2 Fridays per month, and have that individual do some of our periodontal surgeries and implants and so forth. We've been having a very difficult time, you know, placing patients in with local specialists. They're often waiting several weeks to get appointments. And it's kind of a beneficial thing to offer our patients to have a ad hoc specialist that can come in on call and, you know, do these more complex procedures.
Okay, so having this additional carryover space, you're looking for that, again, to assist you with efficiency, not necessarily to increase the number of patients that you would be servicing per hour, based upon what you had discussed before. Is that correct?
Right. This is more of an efficiency calculation. And it's something that, you know, if we look at how many lost hours we have, lost patients, so forth, you know, the lack of extra space is critical to us. You know, any sort of malfunction or breakdown, you know, stops the office. So our primary goal is efficiency. Secondarily, bringing on that specialist is also, I think, critical.
Okay, so let's talk about the specialist a little bit. When do you anticipate having that specialist there? How many times a month?
Yeah, so I use the term ad hoc. So basically what we do with this is kind of a new thing that's happened in dentistry. There are independent contractors who are typically periodontists. I'm not sure why it's just periodontists, but they will go from office to office. And so what you do is you order them up like pizza. You essentially, you know, you say I have 4 patients for this date. You set up a time for them to come in. They take care of those patients and they'll come back 2 weeks later for the post-op. So our goal was on Fridays, we only have one dental provider. We only have one doctor working, and we have a shortened day. And we have excess assistance on that day. So we thought it'd be a useful adjunct to bring that specialist in, you know, several times a month if possible, depending on how much work we have for the individual on that Friday.
So having that specialist come in on that Friday, you would still maintain the staffing of 8 at one time, the 2 doctors, the 2 hygienists, the 2 assistants, the 2 receptionists, correct?
That's correct.
Any other changes to the operations as a result of the expansion other than what you've discussed? Anything else you intend? Anything that you foresee in the future?
No, outside of just the signage question, but I think that's a separate issue.
Yep. Okay, so you know that we're going in for an additional parking variance of 1 parking space due to the addition. Talk to me about and talk to the board about approximately on your worst case scenario, about how many parking spaces are free on site, if any?
Yeah, typically you have 5 parking spaces. That's usually what our count is. You know, again, that's, we're always sensitive to that. Because when we first moved in, we did have people just randomly parking in our lot. So we did, let's say, observe that. You know, it's something we watched for the first couple months. And, you know, most cases, because we're never, and then remember, 8 patient or 8 employee situation is at maximum capacity. That means all doctors are working, all chairs are filled. The office is only in that condition maybe 60 or 65% of the time. So, you know, typically you see between 5 and 8 parking spaces that are in the lot any given time.
Okay. And are some days worse than others in your experience?
Well, the snow days are the only days because we'll typically lose at least 1 parking spot to okay. snow, just the way they pile it up. So, you know, we haven't had any significant snow, and we have been working with the plow company to push the snow into the, we have a little inlet where the, drive-through used to be, and we can stick it in there. So basically we think we've solved that problem, but there was 1 year that we lost at least 1 spot, and that was something that we were cautious about.
So you have a private snow plow company that you engaged, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, so you can very easily dictate where that snow is going to be placed at any given time.
Correct.
All your patients are by appointment, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, everything is scheduled typically by the hour.
And in the absence of any emergencies or anything like that, you don't just have people, yours is not a walk-in type of business.
No, we don't accept walk-ins.
Okay, so let's talk about the signage a little bit. Why do you need, so there's going to be a welcome sign that's going to be located above your entrance. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and was that welcome sign contemplated when you first came before the planning board?
Somewhat. We like the fact that TD Bank used to have a really nice roundel, like a big logo that was up in the gable area. I guess it'd be on the west-facing side of the building. And so we originally had gotten approval for that, but we found out what it cost to actually place a sign 30 feet in the air, you know, several thousand dollars just for the installation. We decided, again, it didn't have any use. But we noticed that a lot of patients, you know, felt that the entranceway was very plain. And some patients wouldn't know how to get in. They sort of like walk to the front, walk to the back. And so we put some decals on the portico, you know, the glass enclosure, the vestibule, to welcome people. But it just seemed to be nice to have a little sign just to the left of the portico that just says, you know, welcome to Round Valley Dentistry, so that people can kind of see that a little more clearly than looking for it on the glass.
So is it going to be approximately the same size as that TD sign and the one that was previously permitted by the resolution?
Yes, it'd be likely smaller.
And the location would be lower than where it was
yes,
previously located?
It's going to be eye height. So for the average person, it'll be just to the left side of the entrance doorway on the northern side there.
And just for the board members, when our engineer and architect come up, we can provide you, to the extent that you don't have it in front of you, with those exact locations. I just wanted Mr. Milo just to give you a little bit of understanding as to why that sign was coming to play now, even though it was previously addressed by the planning board. You also have a monument sign, Mr. Milo, correct?
Correct.
By way of the application?
No, we want to leave the monument. It's just as it is. It's really functioning well, and we only have one associate doctor who's permanent, so we're not going to change any signage on that.
Okay, there was a question in the board planner's report as to whether a nameplate would be placed on that monument sign for the new specialist. I'm gathering from your testimony that that's not the case.
Now, the specialist, again, that this it's something that might not even happen. So the issue with the specialist is that, you know, we have to, typically find several different specialists and again, use them in that sort of ad hoc kind of, contractor situation. There's typically four or five of them float around each geographic area. And we would not be able to permanently, estimate or, assume who's going to be the one that's going to be working that week.
Do you ever anticipate having more than one specialist on site at any one time?
No, again, we're not going to reach out to orthodontics or anything like that. That's really the only thing that's remaining. The periodontist can typically do most surgery with periodontal surgery, tooth extractions, implants. And right now that's where the traffic jam is getting implants in and so forth. The oral surgeons are just, they had a harder time with COVID than we did.
Have you ever had any issues with the township since you've been occupying that building?
No, it's been very smooth.
John, I'm going to ask your opinion on this. We did submit a response letter to the board professionals. I know it just came in today. I was going to ask Mr. Milo as to whether he agreed with our response. I don't know if you want to mark it or just ask him the question.
You don't have to mark this.
Okay. So John, we submitted on behalf of you and the application a response to the board professionals' letters, correct?
Correct.
And did you get an opportunity to review the board's letters from the board planner, the landscape architect, and the engineer?
Yes, it was complicated for me, but yeah, I did read it.
For all of us, I think. And did you take a look at my response that was submitted to the board earlier today?
Yes.
And did you agree with everything that was in there and our representations that we were making to the board?
Seemed proper to me.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to let the board know?
Did we discuss the sign on the northern side of the building?
No, we did not. Thank you very much. So there's going to be one additional building that you're requesting approval of tonight, or one additional sign that you're requesting approval of tonight, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So why don't you just explain to the board the purpose of that sign?
So from the front of the building, there's really no signs that you could see just because the way the trees are set up. And what we wanted to do is place one of those really nice carved signs like our monument has. It'll be just directly up against the side of the building to match the shape of that. We have an oval window it's an oval top on it. So we want to just put it over that window and have it sort of, kind of set off and look really good on the front of the building. It's not going to be a lit sign, but it's something at least during the day that gives more of a kind of a homey rustic feel rather than just the sterile brick that we have there.
Okay. And your understanding is that it will comply with all the ordinance requirements.
Correct.
I don't have any other questions.
I have one question, but I'll see if any other board members have any questions they want to ask. So question about the parking. I was just trying to do the math on this. Would it be correct to say that after the addition, you might have eight employees, I'm looking for maximums here, eight employees, four patients, and worst case scenario, four overlap patients if our two patients all came in at the same time for a maximum of 16? Would you agree that's the maximum possible people you could have on site?
How about one specialist?
Yeah, so basically,
specialist takes the place of one of the other doctors.
Correct.
But still eight. Is that correct?
Yeah. So assuming that, that's correct. Assuming that, let's say we had, worst case scenario that, let's say we had a meeting where all the doctors that work at the office were there and every patient came and every situation was late. That is possible that we can have, almost a full house with parking, obviously. But in the 2 years we've operated, never come close to that.
Adding So when I add that up, that's 16 people that I came up with as a maximum compared to the 18 spots that you have available today. And adding the additional space isn't going to add room for another provider. Is that correct?
Right. The object isn't to have more providers at the same time. It's really just to allow the providers that are currently on site to have a little more flexibility, a little more running room, so to speak. You know, so if, you know, again, if there is an unforeseen circumstance, and either one of the doctors can use that room, like I said, the concept of the runover room is just so central to dentistry right now. But again, it's not something we'd really do if we want to pack the house. You know, again, that doesn't really, believe it or not, doesn't actually produce more profit. You know, it's not a good thing to have everything to its exploding point. So we really do want to just try to keep our numbers. The quality, especially, you know, that's one thing we want to be certain of by keeping it down to that same size office. Yeah.
All right. That was my only question. Thank you.
Can I ask a follow-up on yours?
Sure.
I think what his point was, if you have 8 employees there, plus 4 patients, plus the other 4 patients that come early because they're neurotic or something, and that's a total of 16, and you have 18 spaces, it's your testimony that you have enough spaces with the 18, and that's the basis for asking the board to grant a variance from the technical requirement that you have to supply one more. Is that correct?
Yeah, generally so, yes.
I have nothing further.
Okay.
This is Sharon Stevens. I have a question. But the original resolution, from what I heard, said it was 6 employees. And now I'm hearing that you have 8. So what was the premise that in since 2018, I guess, is when you started, if I have that correct, that you moved to 8 employees?
Yeah, one of the reasons is just we're all stacking employees now. So what's happening is there's no one left to hire. So if someone does come along, we pretty much hire in excess. So normally we'd only have 1 receptionist, and we have some of our reception work actually teleworked. So that's like the new thing that's happening in dentistry is all your insurance and billing and so forth is now done by outside companies. But you know, with the issues with employment today, we needed to have at least an extra person. We call them a floater. They don't really do much, but everyone's grabbing every employee they can. So it does create, you know, kind of the, you know, let's say the perception of a larger office in some cases. But hopefully when the job market returns to normal, you know, we go back to being, you know, lean and mean, as the expression goes.
But I think what she's asking you is you're seeking to modify condition C5 of the prior resolution to replace the limit on the number of employees on site at any one time from 6 to 8. And the basis of the request is you're expanding the floor area without expanding the impervious coverage so that the site and the building can accommodate 8, whereas before it could only accommodate 6. I assume that's the applicant's position. Am I correct?
Yes, yeah. Again, the extra flexibility is critical.
But let me just ask, so Kara, you are seeking to modify that condition because I mean, you need that condition modified to move from 6 to 8. The rest
Absolutely.
Of the condition would remain the same. Again, if you want to do further expansion or go beyond 8, you have to come back to the board.
Correct. Correct. And that's why the testimony right now is that we do have 8. We can accommodate 8. We are doing the additional expansion, which will assist in better accommodating the 8, and there's sufficient parking as well to do so.
Right. But, right, I mean, technically, it's not going to be held against your client, but they shouldn't have expanded from 6 to 8 before coming back to the board, but they're taking care of it now. That's your position, right?
Yes, that's what we're trying to do here tonight.
Better late than never. That's your.
Okay, but what I hear is expanding, and you're already at the max, you know, for this facility, and you're to me, you know, everything. The variances are about making it bigger than what it's allowed to be on the property, and the property is already overcrowded. And so if that's happened in 2 years, like what's to prevent you from hiring two more people past the eight and then having you know, it be the overflow room being used full time. And then we're still in the same spot that we are now. And the other question I had is there's you're talked about one day, one Saturday a month. What's that for?
All right. So the first answer I'd give is just remember that, you know, as a business owner, I'm beholden to keep quality at its highest level. If I create a logjam or a bad circumstance, it's going to destroy my business. So there's no chance mm-hmm. of me getting into a situation where, you know, we have people parking across the street or anything like that. So that's important. That quality is inherent in what I'm trying to do. So we can't expand to too much of a, you know, and I understand the caution. But you know, our reputation is one of being, you know, high quality, having, you know, again, on time, best circumstances. That's how we have to make our brand. So that's really how we're trying to move forward. And, you know, with the job situation, the job market, that's been very, let's say, kinetic, you know, and I think everybody right now is just trying to figure out what the job market's going to be. This kind of stacking of employees, you know, having an extra employee, there's a limiting factor to that too, because we can't afford any more employees. We can only operate out of the four operatories. Again, we don't have a plan to, you know, fully staff a fifth operatory. You know, that's not the idea, because then we'd still be in the same position. We need another runover room and there's no more space to expand. So I think we're kind of self-limiting in that regard. Does that sort of get to the gist of what you're asking me?
I think she's also asking you, Sharon, I think their planner is going to have to address the test that ultimately the board has to apply to the D4 variance is the test that was established in Randolph Town Center versus Randolph. And they said the board's focus must be on whether the site will accommodate the problems associated with the proposed permitted use, but at a larger floor area than permitted by the ordinance. So that's, at the end of the day, that's the $64,000 question. And that's what they're going to have to explain. Can this site accommodate any problems that are going to be caused by the increase of that floor area over to 15%? So I think your questions are valid and it's their burden to answer them, but that's what they have to prove in order for the board to grant the D4 variance. But in a nutshell, what she's saying is, okay, you have eight employees now. You're explaining that the site can accommodate those eight, especially if you do this expansion. But what she wants to know, why, don't take this wrong, why should she believe that it's only that you're going to just keep it at eight? Because before it was supposed to be six, now it's eight. You know, try to say something to her so she's not worried that if the board grants this FAR variance, you're going to go to 10.
Right, and I obviously that's a legitimate concern. You know, there's no question. I mean, if I were expanding like a large corporation, that's what we'd have to do. But some of these changes came about because some very unique circumstances. You know, I mean, COVID has changed, you know, quite a few things for many of us. And
put it this way: how many physical rooms are there in the building as proposed, where you have dental chairs? I mean, do you have more than four dental chairs?
Yeah, so we would be going from a four operatory practice to a five operatory practice.
So I'm just taking Sharon's questions out to their logical conclusion. If you had four chairs, which is four patients and four hygienists and four doctors for a total of 12 people on the site at any one time, right? But eight employees, if you put in a fifth chair, then why couldn't you have five patients with five doctors and five hygienists for a total of 10 employees? That's what Sharon's really asking.
Yeah. Well, that defeats the purpose of the runover room. You know, one of the issues we run into, and it's not often seen, but when we talk about the damage created by stuffing a system, and when you have an office running at 100% capacity, you know, we have on every day just, you know, our normal business model. You have two or three adverse situations that happen every day. If you cancel one patient, you're losing a minimum of two.
Oh, he froze.
Froze, yeah. Give him a minute. Can you text
there
him?
There you go.
I have a message that says, due to low bandwidth, video is not currently available. Video will resume automatically with conditions approved. But since we've already seen him and he's been sworn in, if you can get him on the phone or something, I'll advise the board to let him keep on testifying.
Just texting him now. Where did you see? Oh,
if you take your cursor and put it on top of the orange triangle in the upper left-hand corner of his screen, it'll tell you what the problem is.
Got it. Yeah, I'm not getting him on.
Did we lose Sharon Stevens? Sharon, are you on?
Sharon's on the phone.
I don't see her. Sharon, are you there?
You said Sharon or Cheryl?
Sharon Stevens.
Sharon's muted right now. Sharon, unmute yourself. She's at 908-2-something-something with the last two digits, 73, I believe. Just check that.
That is her number. It does end with 73.
Yes, it does.
Sharon Stevens, you're muted. Denise, can you text Sharon and tell her she's muted?
Am I muted still?
Yeah, yep. Now you're not.
Now we got you back, Sharon. You're okay.
Okay. Okay. So somehow my phone got muted. So I am calling in on the phone because I got dropped from the video.
Okay. Okay.
But Sharon, did you hear the question I thought you were asking?
Yeah, I heard a lot of it, but I don't know if I heard the end. So say again.
Well, okay. I basically asked him that I thought that your concern was if they have four chairs now and they're adding a fifth chair.
Yes.
I suggested he try to assure you or explain why you should believe that they wouldn't go to 10 employees. Because I was using the example, if you have four chairs with four patients and four doctors and four hygienists, 4 plus 4 is 8, and they shouldn't add more than 6. So if they're adding a chair, 5 plus 5 is 10. He was beginning to answer that the fifth chair is, what was the term he used for it? It wasn't a floating
overflow.
Chair. What did he say?
Overflow.
Yes, but he had another word for it. But then he froze. So he didn't get the opportunity to finish answering the question. We're trying to get him back.
So I just sent him the call-in number.
Great.
So hoping he's going to be able to call in.
John, and the term that he used was run-over room.
Run-over room. Thank you.
Run-over room, yes.
I'm back in here.
There we go.
Sorry about that. I'm in a hotel, so they cut me off.
There you are.
All right. Sorry about that. Yeah, they cut me off.
All right. So I think we were trying to get you to finish answering your question as to once that additional fifth chair is established, what is going to stop you from now using all five chairs and having an additional doctor, additional hygienist, and everything else?
Right. So I was just saying that it's kind of self-defeating and that's not what makes an office more profitable. Again, it's stuffing the box. It actually slows down your efficiency. So our goal is to keep that utility of having the extra room and not creating a log jam, because where we are right now essentially is, you know, kind of an office without options. anything that happens, you know, something breaks down, which is quite frequent. You could have a breakdown once every 2 to 3 weeks that sets a operatory into a non-functional situation. You know, even if we had the fifth operatory, we'd still have to have that flexibility. And I think, like I said, it'd be shooting ourselves in the foot if we tried to, sort of stuff the box, as it were.
So I'm thinking you're a smart businessman. And when you originally did this in 2018, that you planned for a runover room.
Yeah, actually, we thought about it initially. And I think, you know, it was one of the situations where just we didn't have the money to do it. So it's something that there's formulaic ways that they do dental offices nowadays. It's sort of boilerplate. And, you know, there's a sweet spot that everybody says to be at. And the idea is you have, you know, four operatories for my size, you know, operation, and have the one runover room is typically considered the optimal way to do it. And, you know, whether or not they change that in years to come, it's hard to say, but that's pretty much the boilerplate way that they want you to, you know, to run for maximum efficiency. And, you know, we didn't necessarily think that initially. And, you know, we figured, you know, under our budget, just do the four operatories and not go for the variance. But, you know, now that we look at it, there's wisdom in that. There's wisdom in having that fifth operatory. You know, as I said, as it is right now, we shoot ourselves in the foot quite frequently.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Oh, I did want to know, what was the, you had said that you're going to add, you're adding more time on Wednesday. I can't remember whether that was a whole new day or whether it was just adding hours, but you're also going to add one day a month on Saturday.
Yeah. So basically on Wednesdays, we just expanded the hours just because we had difficulty getting staff members to stay late, you know, so we wanted to give them an option of coming earlier. So we kind of served both purposes. You know, you have patients, for some reason, patients like coming in very early or very late. And it just kind of worked out really, really well, having a morning shift and switching off into an afternoon shift. And with the Saturdays, those are typically not run in the summers. It depends on how much interest we have in them. You know, in the last 2 years or so, we've worked, it's been averaging, one per month. And the idea is to get like the families with the kids who can't take off school, what have you. And it's only a half day. Mm-hmm. Because you can't really get staff to work weekends. It's very hard to do that. So we have a volunteer system. So basically over time, you know, occasionally a staff member will show interest to work on Saturday. Then we just kind of build one. And it's mostly just taking care of kids, do a lot of cleanings.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
John, if I could just clarify for the record real quick, that Saturday is in effect now. That's not something new that you would be proposing by way of the expansion, correct?
No, we've been doing that for the last 2 years, yeah.
And still, no issues with parking or anything like that? Not even close to having all 18 parking spaces used?
No, we never fully staff on a Saturday.
Okay, any other questions? Are you ready to go to the next witness? I don't think we have any other questions.
Yeah, I'm ready, Mr. Chairman, if no one else has any other questions.
Okay, let's press on.
I don't know if we have anybody in the public, but do you typically do your public questions after all the witnesses that testify?
I already asked at the start of the hearing whether there was anyone in the public, and no one spoke up. Plus, I recognize every name I see on the screen, so we have no one.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, so thank you, John. Wayne Ingram will be my next witness. All right, Wayne.
We've sworn, and you're going to qualify him. I know we've seen Mr. Ingram many times, including, I don't know, twice in the last 6 months, but if you could just run through that again for the record, please.
Have me qualified, please.
Absolutely. Wayne, if you could just give the board the benefit of your education, licensing, and experience, both as an engineer and a planner.
Sure. I am a licensed engineer and planner in the state of New Jersey. Both of those licenses are current and valid. I've been practicing as a licensed engineer for approximately 14 years and as a licensed planner for over 10. Appeared before probably over 75 municipalities throughout the state, probably every township and municipality in Hunterdon County, including this board, and has been in both of those capacities.
And were you involved in this application back in 2017 before the planning board?
I was, correct.
So you have knowledge of the application and what was previously granted?
Yes.
I'd like to offer him, Mr. Chairman and board members, as an expert in the field of engineering and planning.
All right. I don't see, does anyone have any objections? I do not. He's acceptable.
Thank you so much. John, can you share the screen so he could put whatever plans he's testifying to on, and so the board can see if they have any questions?
Can you give him the right to share, or should I do it? I'll make him presenter. Okay. Mr. Ingram, you're the presenter.
Wonderful.
You know how to do this? You must, right?
I think so.
All right, Wayne, I'll leave it up to you as to what you want to put on the screen. All of these documents have been submitted to the board prior to tonight as part of the application. And Wayne, just take it away describing the property, and we'll take it from there.
Sure. Can everyone see my screen there? And the site plan sheet 3 up?
Yep, we got it.
Great. All right, so you previously got an introduction into the property. The lot is 21,676 square feet, and we're in the C1 zone. We have the existing two-story building located central here on the screen. And to the west over here is our 18-car parking lot. As you previously heard, this used to be the TD Bank facility, and when we came in 2017, it's at that time that we made a lot of the modifications to the site for what you have here today. So, you know, the site had significantly more impervious surface than it has now, as it previously had a full drive-through circling around the building. That was removed in lieu of a grass paver system, which is this light hatching that you see here. And essentially we did that so that, you know, basically we had a depressed curb on the parking lot. So, you know, you could get service to the back of the building, you know, for your lawn mowing, for emergency access, for maintenance and cleaning the basin, things like that. At the time, no modifications were made to the drive-through. It still remains in that present condition with, you know, impervious surface located under the canopy. And this dark hatched area you see here is the area where the new operatory would be located. So that will be fully located underneath of the canopy, which is this larger impervious area over top. And, you know, we will not be expanding the impervious in any way. So, you know, we've already made our reductions on the site. We did leave to construct a new concrete sidewalk around to the front of the building, so we had access to this back area. We are proposing to extend the grass pavers a bit further to get to the back of this area. So that's that dark hatching that you see here south of the canopy. As was testified, the additions proposed at 196 square feet, and that will be to the first floor only. So, you know, there is a second floor here and kind of a, you know, balcony area, but nothing is being placed in that area. Hopefully that'll give this, you know, the building more of an appearance of a cohesive structure and not, you know, where a person drives down the road and says, look at that former bank. So we think that's kind of a benefit, you know, to the application here. We are not proposing any changes to the lighting because, again, this was, you know, that was previously reviewed and approved. So, you know, the parking lots and the walkways, you know, were already, you know, determined to be adequate. We're not really proposing any new, you know, walkways or pedestrian areas, you know, so that's all going to remain the same. Regarding the landscaping, that's going to remain consistent with what it is today. The landscaping that we do propose, shown here on the lower left corner of sheet 3, is really to fill in and enhance what's already there. So we're going to leave the existing landscaping on the north and south of the building. We're going to add some screening to the AC units, add some more trees in the parking lot, as well as at the corners of the building, add a shrub row at the base of the addition on top of the retaining wall to the basin, and again, fill in this planter area in front of the building. We are amenable to all of the comments and suggested revisions, of your landscape architect. So, you know, we're happy to swap out the, species and relocate things as necessary, to avoid any conflicts or, provide, more year-round screening. So, all of that is certainly amenable to us. I should also state that, we will comply with all of the engineering comments, and there really were just a couple. But all of those are amenable to us, without objection.
Wait, if I could just backtrack really quickly for a second before you go into signage and the rest of this. Do you happen to recall off the top of your head what the existing impervious coverage was at the time that the TD Bank was there? It's in the resolution.
Off the top of my head, no, I don't have that number. Right now, we're proposed at, it's 40% permitted in the zone. We're at 51.7 and we will stay at 51.7. I believe it was a pretty significant reduction at that time because that was an extensive driveway that was removed.
It was exactly. So if I may, John, and we can reference it's the resolution that we talked about before, 2017-3. It's page 3, at least is the first place that I found it. It talked about the existing impervious at the time of the TD Bank was 63.59%. And just by virtue of the applicant coming in, installing those grass pavers and putting some more of the other landscaping in that Mr. Ingram testified to, it went from 63.59 down to 51.47. So just to kind of give you.
Right. That's what the resolution says. If you look at the chart on page 4 of Mr. Behrens's January 18th memo, it says that your existing impervious is 51.7. So why don't we ask Mr. Behrens, because that would mean that you're 0.3 over what the planning board resolution said you're allowed to be at.
Well, right. The resolution says what it says, and I think we just heard testimony that the existing condition is 51.7%. So, John, repeat, what does the resolution say? What is the percentage?
Eric, can you read what that resolution says?
So 51.47.
0.47.
Say it one more time.
51.47 is what was proposed and granted at the time of the resolution in 2017. And the variance now is 51.49. I'm sorry, that's floor area ratio. My apologies. I'm sorry.
0.7. 51.7, so 0.24% more, on a site like this, that's this small, it's an exceedingly small number. It's basically just potentially just due to how they rounded the curves on the sidewalk here. I in looking at the plan, I don't think there's anywhere that, we could cut impervious where that would make sense to. We would basically just be pulling out, perfectly good curbs and pavements for minuscule changes. So to the extent that we would need additional impervious coverage relief, we would request that because, again, it's not as if anything is done here intentionally or, in any meaningful way different than what was approved. You're just talking about such a small lot. Minor changes in curb locations or sidewalks, could equate to such a small deviation of percentages.
I have a question going the other way. Assuming for argument's sake, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but what if the board said, no, we don't want to grant you the one parking variance? Do you have any place you could put an additional parking space? It would increase the impervious coverage, I realize, but do you have the physical space to put it to get another parking space somewhere?
I would say realistically, no. as you can see, the parking lot here is basically up to the property line in every respect. You know, if we try and jam one up at the front or block this area here, you know, we're really trying to jam in a parking space, which is not easily accessible. You know, it's going to be in the way potentially of vehicles coming in and out. And, you know, is, you know, going to block what we would consider, you know, access paths for, you know, adequate access around the building. So, you know, I don't really see a feasible, you know, way to add an additional parking stall in here, without significantly more impervious.
What type of striping do you have on the site for those spaces?
I mean, they're all normally striped. You know, most of them are angled stalls. We have one, parallel. We have one ADA accessible stall, which is located
what in the north corner. Do you have elastomeric paint? Is it baked on? Because I know that the picture on the plan is probably too far out, but so you can't really see it. But the managing member of the LLC or the general partner or whatever, I thought he testified that people were parking and they weren't, you know, parking in the correct spaces. Did I mishear that, or did he mean something else by that?
I don't know what, you know, where he was referring that people were parking that they shouldn't. I'm not aware.
I thought he said that was at the very start of the business's operations, not what's going on today. Did I mishear that?
Were you questioning what I've mentioned initially, when people, there were people just randomly parking in the lot. So we were having people park there over the weekend is what it was. And we finally put a sign that said,
okay. I thought you were saying that people like your patients were coming there and they weren't parking in the striped parking space.
No, they were just random people because we're off Route 78. They would just sit in their cars and talk on phones.
Forget. Okay. Next time I wouldn't mention something like that. You know, it's like that. You're inviting people to go down a side street. Thank you, including me.
So, I mean, that essentially describes how we're proposing to use the site.
Okay, that's impervious coverage. So, you didn't apply for impervious coverage variance. The notice has catch-all. I'm fine with it, but you are going to need an impervious coverage variance to increase from 51.47, which was the amount permitted by the planning board, to go to 51.47, which was the max approved by the planning board, to go to 51.7, which apparently is your existing right now.
Correct.
And John, Wayne, when you said there's no place you can remove any pavement, you removed the pavement in that area where you put those pavers, right?
That's what was previously removed. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you know, I'm thinking of, like, you know, how would you reduce impervious further? I mean, you would start having to do things like, you know, narrowing out this, you know, slightly overly wide ADA stall, which was here when it was TD Bank, you know, but if we, you know, had to move a curb in to try and save two feet, you know, you could do things like that. But, you know, I don't think at that point, if you're trying to cut like that for a fraction of a percentage, you're doing more harm than good, in my opinion, because you're wasting materials on something that's perfectly good. You know, we don't have an area here that is left that's like a completely unused thing that we forgot to remove or something like that. It's, you know, it was built how it was built, but it was built, you know, efficiently.
I thought the area under the canopy was impervious, and you're not using that, right? You're only using half of it for the proposed extra room?
Correct. So the reason that's not being shrunk is, number one, we have this canopy over the top that is the size that it is. It's not going to change your impervious coverage, but we're also trying to make sure that we have access out of there, you know, like people can walk out, you know, if they have to exit that way or something like that. It's also very flat, you know, so, you know, we would have a very flat area that wouldn't be conducive to drainage if we converted it to, you know, more of a lawn surface, which again would be underneath the canopy, which is why we're not proposing to cut anything out further underneath there.
Okay. And so you are then proposing to keep the canopy when you add the
Correct. Yeah, and so this will just be located underneath it, and you know, it's gonna eliminate the, you know, the appearance of, you know, of a drive through with, you know, you know, like the normal thing you see at a bank with, you know, tellers and, you know, and things like that. Yes.
John, question about impervious coverage, and I guess this is a question directed to Wayne. With regard to the grass pavers, why is that being discounted entirely as, you know, counting as a pervious coverage and not counting toward impervious coverage? Is there something in the ordinance? And I'm really just asking because I don't know. I looked and I wasn't
aware. That's a
good
question because the pavers, they do have some concrete webbing, and then you have the, you know, the soil and grass in between it. It's a good question, Tom. I don't have the answer. Wayne, do you know the answer?
Yeah, I mean, generally this type of system that was employed is considered to be pervious because, you know, normally if you have like even a gravel surface, the DEP doesn't consider gravel impervious unless you put like a DGA base underneath that you're compacting. So if I just laid open gravel, they consider that pervious. In this situation, you know, this is just like a, you know, the grid system takes up a very small fraction of the actual space. It's really just a reinforcement. You know, it's not preventing water from, you know, from flowing down. You know, there's different types of these systems, but this is one where the water is going to flow through it. It's just providing stability. So like if you had to put a fire truck or something on to get around the back, it's going to be able to support, you know, those types of vehicles a little bit, or basically so that, you know, when you're driving up and getting a, you know, your lawn maintenance, you know, truck out of the way, that he's not going to rut the ground and, you know, create mud and things like that. It's really just reinforcement. So, I mean, I typically haven't seen this count as impervious surface. It's green.
Unfortunately, the person who would know the answer is Larry. He's not here because they agreed to all the comments in his report.
I mean, John, the definition of impervious surface starts with any structure, surface, or improvement that reduces or prevents absorption of stormwater into land. My point is, if Wayne's saying that basically it'll function as if it were grass because it's so small in terms of the webbing, then maybe that's acceptable. But I'm not so concerned with this application. I'd be more concerned with the application of this type of material in future applications. So,
right. Quite frankly, if they got a sign off, right? Presumably they got a certificate of occupancy. So someone didn't even catch the fact it was a little over the impervious.
Right.
So I have to assume for this application that if that stuff was previously put in under the prior approval.
Right, it's already there.
Let that sleeping dog lie, but I suggest tomorrow you call up Larry and ask him about this issue for other applications.
And I agree, it certainly does, you know, it depends on the type that you're picking. I mean, there's many grass paver systems which are more, you know, impervious than something like, you know, like this. It's, you know, but again, we choose this as something that would grow grass and infiltrate. Yep.
Don't say anything. It's up to you. I would say, let that sleeping dog lie. If things out there was under the prior approval, you're not proposing it now, I would try to move on to the next meeting and ask board members if they have any more questions. Because
I think you're right, John. This has been out there. This is not a change. Let's keep going on this piece. This is not an addition.
Right.
Thank you.
All right, so I'll move on to signage. And as you heard, that there's no changes taking place to the monument sign. That's going to remain as is. The two signs we're proposing, you see here again on sheet 3. We have building sign A, which that's smaller, like a 3x3 sign. That is going to be located here on the western side of the building outside the entrance. And again, the purpose there, is really just to direct people to the front door. Because the concern was we had this sidewalk around the back, you know, it didn't face the road. We wanted people to know that the entrance here was in the vestibule and not, you know, following this sidewalk around the structure. That, again, would be replacing what we had previously, you know, gotten approved for and what existed, which was a very large TD Bank sign, which was much higher in the building, you know, up on the second floor area, whereas this is immediately adjacent to the door. Question
before we move on. You're saying this is replacing a previously approved TD Bank, but that was not part of the 2017 approval, right?
So the approval was to put a much larger sign on that same wall. And that, you know, and basically what we said at the time was we're going to match the size of the TD sign, which was much larger. What the applicant's saying tonight is they don't have a need to put that sign again on this western wall, a very large sign on the second floor. They want to instead just put this small sign as a kind of a direction to the front door, which is smaller than the TD sign and smaller than what was permitted as a replacement to that TD sign.
All right, got it. Thank you.
And the second sign being sign detail B here, which is noted by your planner, I think it was about 53 and change square feet. That's being located here on the northern side, which is the one that faces Beaver Ave, and that would be placed over the large window on the first floor. We believe that sign is compliant in its size. I mean, the building's about 50 feet long and, you know, over 20 feet high. So, you know, 10% of that would be, you know, about 100 square feet, and we're about 50. So we're well below the size limits, you know, with that sign, you know, and it would be compliant. So it would be facing the street mounted to the building. We didn't see any variances associated with that. So those would be the proposed signs of the application.
Quick question on that second sign. Will that be visible from the street? I drove past there today, and is there not a tree right in front of that large window? Would that not obscure the sign you're just discussing now?
I mean, yeah, we do have street trees, you know, and they are getting a bit taller, and everything froze, and they're, you know, they're getting bigger. But I think it's a question of where, you know, as you're driving down the road, you know, you can see this building for sure. And we, you know, by putting the, you know, it's not going to be visible from every angle, but we do obviously have breaks in the trees. And, you know, we think that, you know, it's the most visible we can get. We weren't looking to be excessive with the size and max something out. We thought it was tasteful and, you know, in the scheme, you know, of and scale that you would look for. But, you know, our building is where it is. And, you know, it's really, you know, we thought kind of the best we could do. To create some visibility for, you know, for the site.
Right. So your testimony is that it will be visible from the street from an angle other than straight on. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the applicant, you know, doesn't want to waste his money to put up a sign that, you know, he doesn't think is going to, you know, create some visibility. But, you know, we thought that, you know, he believes that's his best location. And it does face the street, which is the requirement.
Okay. Thanks.
So, Wayne, quickly, just to cover a couple other things, there was a comment or a question, I should say, in the board landscape architect's letter inquiring as to whether the existing foundation planting shall remain. All that's existing now will stay in addition to what's being proposed on the plans, correct?
That's correct, yes.
And you did testify that we agreed to swap out any other species and address every other comment in the architect's letter of January 19th.
Correct.
There was also a letter from the from Mr. Behrens. That one was dated January 18th, and we provided a response to that letter. Have you had an opportunity to look at the engineering portions of the response to the planner's letter?
Yes, I think we kind of touched on those again. We're happy to make the landscaping changes. I think the request was that we look to see if we can add anything around the trash enclosure. We can certainly work with the professionals to, you know, propose something additional around that existing trash enclosure, which is located here on the western edge of the site. I mentioned no changes to the lighting, and that we believe the signage to be compliant for what's proposed. So I think that was the extent of the design questions there.
And then any changes to make the calculations consistent across the board on the plans, that'll be made as well.
Yes, the FAR we're seeking is what will be, you know, is requested. There's no changes to that. I think we have some minor discrepancies of, you know, about 6 or 7 feet between ours and the landscape architect's plan. You know, likely just due to, you know, which which, you know, brick of the facade that we were, you know, measuring from, but we'll make sure our final plans are consistent in that respect.
And they'll be consistent with the engineering drawings.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Anything else? Lighting, we talked about signage. We talked about landscaping. We talked about, why don't we go through the relief that's required here, from a planning perspective?
Sure. So I think we've noted what those variances are, but to go through them, we have a C variance for the 40-foot front yard setback, where the addition's proposed at 30.91 and 34 feet, from the two respective front yards, which are, Beaver Avenue and, Route 31. I think it's important to note that the, you know, the addition is not going to be the closest part of the structure. So this is located centrally in the side of the building, and is not encroaching any closer than the existing building, and, you know, is not going to appear any different than it does with the, you know, the you know, essentially the overhang and the drive-through as it exists today. We have the parking variance, which was previously...
Hold up, hold up. That's the negative criteria. What's the, is this a C1 or a C2, and what's the reason that it satisfies the positive criteria? The
I was still going to go through it, and I was just listing them out at this point. Sorry. Huh? I'm just listing them out at this point. I'll go through more detail for you.
Okay.
The second variance was related to the parking of 22 stalls being required initially, where we provided 18. This revised application will require 23, where we're still providing the same 18. And the final one was that floor area ratio, 15.49, where 15% is permitted. The one other thing, based on what we talked about earlier, was the exception that's required, for landscape buffering, where I believe per the ordinance that's indicated a 50-foot buffer is required. I think in this case, you know, I'll just get this one out of the way now. As you can see on this property, 50 feet from front yards is not even something we can entertain here. We have this narrow, property that's, you know, undersized, and at its, you know, narrowest point, it's only about 26 feet wide. So, you know, the feasibility we have to, you know, add any landscaping to the main part of the parking lot, it really just doesn't exist. You know, we need the overhang for the cars. We need the area for people to swing their doors open in the parallel stall. You know, the street trees that exist are pretty much the best we can do, in landscaping, at least in terms of that, specific buffer requirement. So now into the justifications, as outlined by your planner,
You also have that impervious coverage variance that we picked up.
Yes.
Gonna add that to your list.
Will do. The test for our FAR, you know, based on the testimony you've heard, that what we're really tasked with here is saying what the, you know, can the site support the increased FAR with the impacts that that creates? I think what you've heard is that, you know, this is not an increase that's proposed to add intensity per se to the lot, but rather, you know, to provide that, you know, that overflow space so that the site can operate more efficiently. Part of it is due to, you know, changes that have occurred due to COVID, making sure that they have, you know, the ability to properly clean everything with regard to new standards, you know, to increase that time, make sure that they don't have a chair down if something malfunctions. They're not looking at this point to increase their intensity beyond how they've operated for the last couple of years at the site. And I think what you've heard is that, you know, even with the 8 employees that have, you know, been more recently operating, the site still has an excess of parking. And, you know, all we can go is and judge things by is the testimony here and, you know, the applicant's, you know, assertions that of what they're going to comply with. And there's no reason to think that they wouldn't. You know, he's come back here asking for this, you know, these approvals and to be upfront about the changes that have occurred, you know, and how he's had to staff his business due to COVID, which, you know, again, shows you his intent to be forthright. And how the business will operate. So, you know, based on those, you know, determinations, you can clearly see that, you know, we're going to still have sufficient excess parking that adding this overflow operatory is not going to create a parking problem for the site. In terms of other potential negative impacts, I personally don't think there are any from this that make the site less suitable. You know, from a, I think one of our biggest positives is the aesthetics of what we're creating here with this addition, in that, you know, you have that building, as I mentioned, that when you drive down the road, you say, huh, look at that converted bank. If we do this, and, you know, it's going to be done, in, obviously, in a tasteful way that's complementary to the existing building, that we're going to have, you know, something that's going to more fit, you know, the character, and it's going to take away that, you know, that opinion and make this look like a more cohesive property. The applicant already removed, you know, much of the impervious surface. You know, so he kind of already gave the town that benefit of, you know, making a more compliant site with impervious, you know, and by that right, you know, improving the aesthetics, the stormwater. As I mentioned, we're not doing anything here to change the impervious. So, you know, this basin at this point is oversized. It was designed for more than we currently have. And, you know, nothing we're doing is going to impact our stormwater flows. You know, it's not having any impact on utilities. And arguably, again, aside from the aesthetics of the building, I think we're proposing significant improvements to the landscaping, which only helps, you know, beautify the site. So, you know, from that perspective, I don't know that there's really any other, you know, impacts that this increased FAR has in terms of the site's suitability. I really only see, you know, benefits from how the applicant can run his operation and the aesthetics that you're going to see here at the end of the day. The front yard setbacks, I think it's supported under a very similar rationale. It is not going to be the closest points to the property lines. So, it, you know, nothing about the addition is going to make the setbacks appear like they're being further constrained. And the fact that you have this canopy and this drive-through here today, it's not one that's going to detract in any way, you know, from the intent of, you know, the town's zoning rules. You know, in fact, again, I think centrally located as it is, it does its best to comply, you know, with those standards.
Quick question. What was the basis that the planning board granted the front yard setback variances in 2017?
I mean, that was really a hardship because we had the building is where it is. You know, it was already in existence at that time. You know, obviously the tests the first time this was constructed were much harder. But, you know, we didn't do anything to exacerbate those changes.
Right. So what's the, if it was hardship in 2017 because the building was where the building was, what's the basis for the front yard variances to allow the addition now?
Well, I think any addition is going to be a hardship because it can't comply with the narrowness and unique shape of the lot. But, you know, again, we are asking to add to the building. So, you know, in terms of if you wanted to view this as a flexible variance, I think, you know, the benefits here are the improved aesthetic and making this stop looking like a structure that it's not anymore, you know, that will be further supplemented with landscaping to make it appear cohesive versus, again, what I believe are not really any negative impacts because it's not, you know, it's not increasing or it's going to be decreasing any of the setbacks beyond what they already were. It's, you know, it's a few feet back in every direction.
What you're saying is, The benefit to the public, if the board granted the front yard setback variances, it would allow the addition to be built. By allowing the addition to be built, that will result in the overall project improving the aesthetics of the building and landscaping.
Yes. I mean, in general, the purposes of zoning, I think, are two here. You know, we have the desirable visual environment, which I think are improved for the reasons stated. And I think you also have a general, you know, support of the general welfare. You know, the applicant runs a dentistry practice. It's, you know, it's a use that's needed in the community. He provides, you know, benefit to public health. And he's trying to make sure that operates safely, and complies with, you know, needs that have evolved in terms of, you know, how he has to operate with COVID restrictions and cleaning and things of that nature, which I think is, you know, is important and, you know, shows how he's trying to do things the right way. So I think those are both furthered in the application.
John, draw a question for you. Were you asking about benefits in the context of the D variance or the bulk variances?
I was asking specifically about the bulk variances because the focus on that D4 is, will the site accommodate the problems associated with the proposed permitted use but at a larger floor area? So what I'm focusing on is, if the board said, look, it was C1 last time because that's where the building was, but this time the applicant has a choice. They can either do an addition or not do an addition. I think Wayne even has kind of acknowledged that maybe it's not really a C1, but there's a case, Cullen versus South Plainfield Planning Board, the appellate division from 1996, which says that the zoning benefits resulting from permitting a deviation are not restricted to those directly obtained from permitting the deviation. The benefits of permitting the deviation can be considered in light of benefits resulting from the entire overall development. So that's why I was asking him that, I mean, quite frankly, there are no direct benefits from granting a front yard variance.
I was assuming this was going to be a hardship variance. You're saying that they can't make that argument because it's an addition? They've already used that chip?
Kind
to
of.
To me, that's the more compelling case.
Wayne, about the fact that if the board doesn't grant the front yard variance, they can't do the addition. If they don't do the addition, they're not going to spend the money to make the building look nicer and put in the landscaping. Therefore, if you granted them the bulk variances to allow the addition, that will result in the aesthetic benefit to the public. It's the outside of the building. You know, they're not looking at it when they're inside working. That's for everyone to look at the outside and the increased landscaping. And under that Pullen case, in my opinion, if you wanted to grant these bulk variances with those benefits, you could.
If we wanted to go to the C2 route.
Right.
Is there anything precluding us from going a C1 route should the board be inclined to grant it?
If the board's inclined, you can do that also. But I think Wayne had this thing in the back of his mind, like I had in the back of my mind, that at what point, right? Put it this way, if they needed a C1 and they weren't going to go over the FAR, or if they needed a C1 and they weren't going to go over the impervious, I have an easier time with a C1. But,
yeah,
the issue is they have a triangular-shaped lot. It gives them problems. And that's what the planning board found in 2017, that the shape of the property caused the deviations. Now it sounds like that the size of the building is causing this deviation, which is a harder C1 to prove. That's why Wayne was suggesting and I was suggesting the C2 route.
Okay.
And if I may, John, if this isn't appropriate at this time, that's fine. But I am looking at what was submitted in connection with the application was the 1990 resolution. 32-90 of the planning board, and that was the granting of the original site plan approval for the bank itself. And when we look at that, the board talked about, regardless of the use of the property, all of the above variances would be needed because of the size and configuration of the lot and the lack of adjacent land to cure these non-conforming aspects. Property cannot be used for any permitted purposes without the granting of multiple variances.
Right. Here's the problem, right? I get it, but they now have a use. They don't have that problem anymore.
No, I get it. And the only thing I was just going to put in front of the board also was those variances that were granted at that time pursuant to the C1 were more extensive than these variances. So that front yard setback variance for that extreme condition already exists. What's being requested is not exacerbating in any way those variances. And again, just board's consideration.
That's the negative criterion. We're talking about what positive reason is to grant these things.
And again, I think my statement on that is the positive reason, as indirect as it may be to your point that is still supported as a positive reason, is that, you know, we have a building that from the outside still appears to a bank. And I think the argument here is that when this doesn't appear as a bank and it appears as a single cohesive structure with this additional landscaping that we're giving that we don't have to give today, that is a clear benefit to how people driving by and seeing this property will view it, as it will be more cohesive and will stop looking like the bank that it is not.
Tom, I'm not taking sides on this, but I'm saying that, in my opinion, what Wayne is testifying to under that Pullen case is a recognized, that's a recognized way of granting a C2 variance to get an indirect benefit.
Okay. All right. We can debate. We get to that section.
Sorry, Wayne, to have interrupted, but
oh, no problem. And so then we also have the parking variance, and I think we've hit on this pretty well. And you know, the justification for this variance is simply that you know we have nowhere else to comply. We would you know add an additional stall. You know, that this project is generating if we could, but we can't. But the important thing here is that based on everything you've heard, this site can operate without that additional stall being added. You know, at a completely full capacity with everything you're hearing today, we're still going to have an excess of, you know, at least two stalls, on this site at an absolute max capacity of how he intends to operate. You know, I think you always have the issue of enforcement. You know, which there's a problem on every project, but you can really only take the applicant at his word. You know, he was forthright in coming here asking for this relief. And he's telling you how his site operates. I can say that driving past this site every day, I concur with his assessment. You know, I have never seen this parking lot full. And, you know, based on how he's proposing to operate his business, it will continue to not be full and not be a problem. So I don't see any negative impacts for granting of the variance. The positives really being that, you know, you're allowing this applicant to, you know, continue to operate a top quality operation, in a safer capacity, you know, again, kind of subsuming this variance under the greater whole of the project. I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, the cards got played in the benefits that, you know, the applicant previously provided with this. You know, he took a derelict vacant property, which was vacant for a long time and was falling into disrepair. He brought this property back. He's put a productive use in it. He's reduced the impervious coverage. You know, all of those things were benefits that have already been realized. And I think this is really just going to be, you know, a further component of that. Had he had the money to do it, he probably would have been better off putting this in the initial application. But we, you know, he just wasn't there at this point. So I don't see that, you know, particular variance is a concern. And finally, to touch back on the impervious.
Hold up one more minute, Wayne.
Sure.
I was hoping that you would say, yeah, you could squeeze a space in somewhere, but it doesn't make sense. It would block this. It would create unnecessary impervious because then you'd be setting yourself up for a C2 parking variance.
That's fine, John. We can do that. I think I previously mentioned, to your point, I mean, you previously asked me that question. There's two places you could look to put a stall. You could put it in this striped area, right in front of the building, and you could try and put one in front of the sidewalk in the front of the building. I can tell you that doing either of those things is only going to increase your impervious coverage, and it's going to be less, you know, safe or accessible because you're putting, you know, stalls in areas that vehicles are turning into the site, and it's, you know, it could be a conflict of vehicles, you know, to do that. We're also trying to keep this striped area clear, again, for emergency access, for, you know, for maintenance of the facility. And, you know, really every time this person would back out of what would obviously be the most used stall, they're backing right out, you know, into a car, you know, that would be coming off Beaver Avenue, would hardly have the room to turn into the site, you know, if a car was backing out at the same time. So, and again, from that perspective, it is a bit of a hardship. We can't. You know,
well, Wayne, it's not a hardship. From that perspective, it's a C2 variance.
Sure. The benefits do not outweigh the detriments of adding that stall.
Right, but it's better planning not to do it. Sure. It's less faith if you squeeze it in. It's going to increase impervious if you squeeze it in, and you don't need it. Therefore, if they grant the variance, it's better for the environment and safer. That's what you're really saying, right?
I concur, yes. And so the last variance is just to get back to the impervious coverage, which is, you know, only, you know, about 0.2% greater than what was previously approved. I do think it's relevant to note, you know, how much higher the impervious coverage was on the site prior to the applicant taking over. And would just say that, you know, the increase is de minimis. And, you know, much like adding an additional parking stall would not be the best planning. I would say that to try and shave this very small percentage out of the site for the sake of trying to get ourselves back to that approved coverage is not better planning, because it's just, it's going to end up just wasting perfectly good materials of curb and pavement, you know, and digging up things that are in fine shape that is not really going to have any appreciable benefit to the project, because the stormwater system is already designed for much more, and it would just be somewhat wasteful. So, you know, that's not a question of could we comply. It's, you know, I don't see a practical benefit to doing so.
It's not that you don't see a practical benefit. You're saying it would be a waste of resources if you did, if you shaved it off.
Correct. So I think that's the extent of the variances, you know, we're requesting in our proofs.
And then the only additional one, or ones, I should say, would be the relief from the condition of the 2017 approval. And that would be with regard to the two additional employees and the one additional dentist chair. So, Wayne, is there any comments with regard to anything else that you haven't said that would apply to that relief?
No, I think we've more or less covered, you know, covered that in what we've discussed.
And I think we went through the fact that you agree with all the comments in the responses to the board professionals' letters.
Yes, we will make all the requested changes. You know, other than as discussed tonight, you know, all the comments will be addressed to the professional satisfaction.
Based on what you you've heard tonight, would you conclude that there's any significant increase in intensity of the usage of the site?
No, and again, I think that's based on the applicant's, you know, testimony of how, you know, this is needed and how it will be utilized. The intention here is not to create an intensification to the site, just to help him run his operation better, you know, and provide, you know, that overflow space, you know, to prevent from downtime.
Anything else you'd like to tell the board?
No, just I believe that the application, you know, can and should be granted, and that, you know, the relief can be granted without, you know, substantially impairing the zone plan, master plan, or zoning ordinance. And I think the, you know, the testimony tonight supports that.
John, I have no other questions.
Any board members have questions of Mr. Ingram?
Wayne, why don't you stop sharing the screen so everyone can see everyone again?
I just had one small question.
Karen, go loud, please.
I just had one small question. In the back, there appears to be a door in the proposed new room that goes out to the back of the building. Is that just for fire emergency?
I believe so, but I would let the architect confirm that.
Thank you.
In a similar vein, I guess, the addition will have a brick veneer on the front of it and vinyl siding on the side and the front facing Route 31. I just question if the board would want the whole addition to have the brick veneer as opposed to one of the faces.
Tom, we were going to have our architect testify as to the consistency. So if that's something the board would like to hear, we could certainly have him come up and explain.
I don't know if we need extra testimony.
Because part of your C2 stuff is based on aesthetics, so I think you better get the architect to lock it down.
Question for Tom Behrens. Do you agree that all the signs proposed comply with the ordinance after what you've heard?
Starting with the monument sign, I believe that received prior variance approval and it's there. Certainly the wall sign directly facing Beaver Avenue on the northerly facade is compliant. And I believe the 9-square-foot wall sign facing the westerly wall sign was also previously approved. I did have a question as to whether or not, you know, it's not technically facing a street per se or on a front facade, but I think it was already approved. So, in that sense, the sign package seems to be both compliant and, you know, previously approved.
So no additional relief is required regarding the signs. Do you agree with that?
Correct. That's my understanding.
And I agree with that too.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Ingram? Okay. I think we're going to move on to architecture then.
That'd be great, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Okay, John Haverly.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, John. Thank you. So you've previously been sworn. Why don't you give the board the benefit of your education, licenses, and experience?
Graduate of NJIT.
Uh-oh. Oh,
he froze.
Wow.
Forgot how all these full Zoom meetings go. You're on a little roll, a mini roll with in-person meetings there for a while.
I know. I've got two that still are. My other three aren't.
Yeah, I have one that's been in-person the whole time.
Yeah. I don't envy you in that respect.
And the reason is they got Zoom bombed with some really disgusting stuff in the beginning. They got so freaked out that they've never gone back to it.
That's what you were talking about before. Yeah. I mean, that was, it's kind of like everybody had a platform. So at the very beginning, that's really what they tried to do. I've heard of a lot of
people. Lucky out in Clinton Township. We have not had abusive people. We haven't had anyone, you know, bombing or anything. I hope I'm not jinxing things, but it's been, and the meetings have run fairly well. I mean, we're having some technical difficulties tonight that we don't normally have.
You know what I will say? There's definitely a lag because even with talking, John, you'll start talking, but the blue around your screen won't go on. Like, it'll be delayed before it goes on there. There's something's with – I don't know what it is tonight.
Interesting.
All right, hold on. Let me see. He wants me to send him the call and number.
Yeah, I just did an experiment, and you're right.
Yeah. I don't know what that is, but – all right, I'm just sending him the call-in number.
Denise, what's on our agenda for next month?
I don't have anything that is ready yet, but there's one application that we...
Let me ask you something. It's 10 o'clock. I don't know how long the architect's going to take, but what kind of timing? I mean, we're in the dead of winter right now. When's the applicant, assuming the board granted approval, when would they want to construct this thing?
I'm going to have to leave that up to Wayne and John. I will say the architect, I wasn't even going to call him unless the board had questions, with the exception of dealing with the materials, et cetera. I don't expect you to need to
call him. You need to call him because all those C2s are dependent on the aesthetic thing.
He's back.
Okay. There he is.
Can we find out what kind of time constraint? Again, there's no guarantee the board will grant this, but if the board grants the application, when are you looking to pull a construction permit? Do you still have to? You still have to do construction drawings, right? These aren't your construction drawings.
No. I don't know. I need somebody to help me answer that.
I know. Who's going to answer the question?
I don't see. Oh, there's John.
John, you got to unmute yourself and try to answer the question.
I mean, I do know that we were obviously trying to get the approvals as quickly as possible. The other issue, of course, also is back ordering of materials, back ordering of internal furniture, et cetera, things that might be necessary. So, you know, any jump that we can get on those delays, especially in this time period, is important. That's why I'm thinking, where's your mind going, John?
Well, my mind's going is it's 10:07. The architect hasn't testified yet. People are probably getting tired. There's nothing on the agenda for February, so let's continue the architect to February and finish the case. That's where I was going, but it's up to the chairman and the board.
Yeah, I was thinking we might finish this by 10:30, but let me ask by a show of hands, how many people are good to go to the bottom of the hour here? Heidi? Sharon, are you shaking your head? Are you near the end here?
I could keep going if everybody else wants to.
Put it this way. Okay. If you could finish by 10:30, that's one thing.
Right. Right.
I don't think it's going to happen. Sure. I mean, you can keep on going. I don't think you're going to be done by 10:30. I think if you say you're going to go, you're going to go. If you get out of here by 10:45, you're going to be good.
Right. And I agree with what John's saying. It doesn't feel to me, since he's not even on, you know, because you're having technical difficulties, that it's going to finish.
I mean, you can give it a shot.
And then there's usually a lot of discussion afterwards. So that's just my
John, theory. Are you on?
The architectural elevation. Now, does the architect
hold on a second,
have
John
any
Drill.
Color? Does the architect have any color exhibit or something that he's going to be showing?
Welcome to WebEx. Enter your access code or meeting number followed by pound.
He does not.
John Haberly, you're on. He's on. We can hear him.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
We can
John
hear
Haberly,
you, John.
We can hear you.
Sorry, I don't know what happened.
Okay, we can hear you, but you can't show anything, right?
Your entry.
Yeah, I'm very sorry.
Or the meeting is not started yet. Re-enter your access code or meeting number followed by pound.
That's weird. You're in, so I wouldn't think it'd be.
Can you hear me? Anything. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. You're trying to dial in on your cell phone while you're already in on the computer.
Yeah, I'm getting no connection on the computer.
Your entry is not valid, or the meeting is not started yet. Re-enter your.
John?
John Haberly, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Let's hope we don't hear that replay again.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can hear you. So, okay. Tom, you got to decide what you want to do.
Yeah. Suzanne, Dan, you have a preference? You want to go a little bit?
I'm good till 10:30 easily, but I don't think we'll be done by then.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. If we don't think we're going to finish, then let's stop here and not try to break up the architecture.
Can I make a suggestion? If we are going to continue, can you have the architect just – it doesn't have to
no,
be
– No, I think we should not do that. I don't think people feel like we're going to finish tonight. If we're not going to finish tonight, let's not start the architecture.
No, I understand. What I'm suggesting is if we're not starting the architect, at least give him a suggestion that maybe he – be prepared or submit ahead of time. It doesn't have to be a fancy color rendering, but at least just color up his print so people can see what the outside of the building is proposed to look like.
You're asking for additional exhibits beyond what he submitted.
Right.
Yeah, I think the testimony was it was going to be consistent or exactly like what's there, but we could definitely work on that. That'll be easy for the board to see. The other question I have is there any other questions for the engineer or is that someone that we can avoid having come back at the next meeting?
Put it this way, Tom. She's asking, could the engineer be excused?
Yeah, I don't think we have any questions. If any come up, I don't know. Maybe you can ask him to be available by phone and not sit through the whole meeting. We've done that in the past. You know, don't go out of town. Don't go out of town that day.
Well, or if you do, it's going to be on Zoom. Bring your laptop with you.
I'm getting a laugh, so I'm thinking that's okay.
Yeah, we didn't have any questions for Mr. Ingram other than the couple that I asked, so I don't think there's a lot of to be discussed in that area.
Okay, so
Denise, we have nothing on the agenda for February. We could continue this at the February meeting.
For the record, February what?
Is it the 28th?
Yes.
Okay. February, so this hearing is going to be continued to February 28th. with no need for further notice. Now, I hopefully will be in Israel then. I will participate via Zoom.
Just one other thing to clarify. I'm not going to be here on February 28th. My wife, I shouldn't blame this on her. I have vacation plans. I don't blame my wife. I asked David Pfeffer if he was going to be here February 28th, and he was not positive because
then we need a special meeting. We can't do this to these guys.
Right. If we want to, and my calendar is pretty flexible. Yeah, I'd be willing to do.
I have a good suggestion here, Denise. What are the planning board meetings in February and what's on their agenda? Do they need both of their meetings? And Tom, the advantage of this is all the professionals, we have blocked out two planning board meetings a month and one BOA meeting a month. So you won't have any conflicts with us. Denise, you must be muted.
Planning board is only meeting once in February. They are meeting on the 7th. 21st is President's Day.
Can I ask a question? Unless schools are out on the 21st and you're taking your kids somewhere, would people mind meeting on the 21st?
I'm okay on the 21st.
Is anyone not okay with the 21st?
Heidi, would that work for you?
I don't know. I don't have my calendar in front of me. Can we decide this tomorrow?
Well, we need to continue this to a date certain so they don't have to re-notice.
Okay.
Can you go, Tom, find your calendar, Heidi? Or
Yep.
Okay. Okay. How about you, Suzanne, 21st? Would that work for you?
It does, okay. Yes.
Dan?
I'm good.
Dan, would the 21st work for you?
Yes, it would.
Okay, and Sharon?
Yes, I'm good.
Okay.
How about Cheryl?
Oh, Cheryl. Sorry, I keep forgetting because I don't see your picture. Cheryl, you're on mute, I think. Can you unmute Cheryl?
I do really appreciate this, everybody. It's very, very helpful.
What I'm going to do, Tom, just in case I have some from Israel, I generally have a better connection than I have from here. I'll have Katie backing me up, but I've done this before. It's a question of 7 o'clock here is 2 o'clock in the morning over there. So I just wake up at 1:30, take a shower, and then do the thing and then take a nap. Now, the other question is, if the architect, besides bringing the color, can you bring a brick veneer, bring a brick veneer around all sides? I mean, so just have an answer for that next time, because that's, I believe that our planning expert asked for that.
Sure. That was brick veneer on all sides, Tom, that's what you were looking for?
That's what Tom's looking for.
Right. That was just a simple question. Right.
And I just want to know about the door in the back.
Yes.
Sharon wants to know about the door. And what I'm most interested in is the color. Again, it doesn't have to be a true rendering, but just get the color sheet so people can see what it is they're approving. Because then if they want to grant it, I got a great tie-in for a resolution.
Cheryl Lewis, are you off of mute?
Any text Cheryl and see if she's available on February 21?
I just did that. I'm waiting for her to reply. Cheryl Lewis, yeah, I'm just going to call her.
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
That was a yes, Cheryl?
Yes.
Okay, so everyone can make it on the 21st. I know, Denise, that's a problem for you. I think we can schedule around that. So
okay.
We're talking about continuing till Monday 2/21.
Right. continue to February 21. No need for further notice. And Denise, between Tom and I, we can do all the secretarial responsibilities.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you all. I appreciate you making yourselves available on a night that you weren't expecting. It's very much appreciated.
Okay. All right. Thank you, St. Clair. We'll see you on the 21st. And for the board members, does anyone have anything else they want to talk about before we adjourn?
Tom, this is Dan. Confirmation. Are we canceling then the meeting on the 28th and replacing it with the meeting on the 21st?
Well, that's a good question.
Well, we don't have anything scheduled on the 28th currently. Is that correct, Denise?
We do not. We have an application that may be complete and may be scheduled for February, but it has not been scheduled yet.
So, Denise, listen, if that application needs to get scheduled, this application should take, at this point, if he brings in the stuff we've asked, it shouldn't take more than a half hour. So why don't you schedule, if that other application is ready, schedule it for February 21, cancel February 28th. Just remember tomorrow we got to call me. We got to do two open Public Meetings Act notices in two different newspapers to create February 21. Or, Denise, you know what we could do? Oh, my gosh, we're at the reorg. Tom, you want to make a motion?
With the org meeting.
Yeah, make a motion to amend the schedule and make February 21 the regular meeting in February and take off February 28th. Then you don't have to cancel one. You don't have to special OPR notice the other one. You making a motion?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, are there any problems with that? I can't think of any. Okay. All right. I will move to amend. It's the board calendar, yep. And then also the special resolution we approved. It's two things that we need to change, right?
Correct.
Right.
You're going to replace February 28 with February 21.
Correct. So that's the motion. Can I have a second on that?
I'll second. Sharon.
Okay. And Denise, would you call the roll on that, please?
Yes. Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer? I'm sorry, Mr. Pfeffer. Ms. Warbach?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Ms. Light?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Okay, great. And we need to let Tom and David know. Tom Yeager. Okay, I think we're all set. Anything else before we adjourn?
That's enough.
Yes, thank you.
Get a motion to adjourn, please.
So moved.
Mm-hmm. And a second?
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, thanks. All right, see you all on the 21st.
All right, have a great evening, great month. Bye.